Everybody take a seat. Take a seat if you came in. We'll get started. Thank you for coming this evening. This is a special town meeting, and I'm going to call the meeting to order. It's 7:32. Okay. Under Article 2, Section 2 of the town bylaws, a quorum is 100. We have well in excess of that number, so that we will declare the meeting in order. Due to the resignation of Michael Fee, who has moved from Sudbury, we find ourselves without a moderator this evening. Therefore, the first order of business will be nominations and election of a temporary moderator who will preside over this special town meeting. The term of office for the temporary moderator will end upon dissolution of this meeting. And this is in accordance with Chapter 39, Section 14 of the Mass General Laws. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on the duties of the moderator, and then we will entertain motions of nominations. The moderator presides and regulates the proceedings of town meeting in compliance with Article 2, Section 4, and Section 5 of our town bylaws. The moderator, while presiding over a town meeting, shall not participate in the discussion of any matter under consideration, but may, upon request, answer questions relating to town meeting procedure and correct any errors of procedure which may occur. The rules and the practices that are not provided for by law or town bylaw shall be determined by the rules and practices contained in the most recent edition of town meeting time. This, by the way, is not the most recent edition of town meeting time. Okay, so now I will await nominations for the office of temporary moderator. Yes. Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. Could you write that down? Would you put that? So it's Elizabeth Cork, correct? Okay. Are there any other nominations? Okay. I see no other nominations. So I will say that the nominations are closed. And what I am looking for is a motion for that. Well, I should say a motion to be closed. So may I have a motion? Yes. And a second. You see, I wouldn't be a good moderator. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do is we'll have a vote. It's just going to be a hand vote with your cards. So you have to have your cards that you checked in with. Okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. The nominations are closed. Okay. All in favor of Elizabeth Quirk being the temporary moderator for this meeting, please raise your cards. All opposed. It passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. Beth, if you would come up, I will swear you in as our moderator. Thank you for your patience with me. Turn this meeting over to Beth Quirk.
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Quirk. And thank you very much for the privilege and the honor of serving as temporary moderator of this special town meeting. In keeping with Sudbury Town Meeting tradition, I invite you to rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I have asked Kirsten Rupinian, former select woman, to lead us.
Allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. As we did at annual town meeting this year, we are providing closed captioning of these proceedings. The screens can be found above the stage. Please feel free to fill in some of the closer seats if that would be helpful for you to be able to read the closed captioning. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to residents. I also can report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to Christine Nyhan, the town accountant, is $2,793,163. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the related procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you know, Sudbury has adopted the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, of the special town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant? Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That was a unanimous vote, so the motion passes. In the event that I am unable to preside over an article, it is necessary that we appoint an assistant moderator. I have asked Lisa Gutch, a former member of the Sudbury Public School Committee, to serve in that role. May I please have a motion approving the appointment of Ms. Gutch as assistant town moderator for the 2017 special town meeting? Does that receive a second? This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. I'd now like to take a moment to introduce our hardworking and dedicated town officials. For the benefit of the hall, I would ask that you please raise your hand when your name is called. To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell. To my immediate left sits Town Council Barbara St. Andre. And to her left is the Board of Selectmen. We'll start with Bob Hardy, the Chair, Susan Giuliano, Pat Brown, Dan Carty, and Len Simon. We also have Town Manager Melissa Murphy-Rodriguez. And next to her, we have the Finance Committee, Brian Semple, the Chair, Jeff Barker, Vice Chair, Susan Barry, Joan Carlton, Jeffrey Atwater, Adrian Davies, Jose Garcia Metin, Tammy Dufault, and Eric Polk. And then, if you'll bear with me, I need to consult my hot off the press list of town staff who are here. I'm sorry, I failed to mention Rose Miranda, who's on stage next to Rosemary Harvell. She is the assistant town clerk. And facing the stage, we have Mark Thompson, technology administrator, and Brian Powell. Patty Golden, the senior administrative assistant to the town manager. Elaine Jones, Layla Frank, Cynthia Gary, Christine Nyhan, Dennis Kahane, Megan Donahue, Marianne Bilodeau, Bill Miles, fire chief, Scott Nix, police chief, Dan Nason, Jim Kelly, Bill Murphy, Debbie Deneen, Lauren Goddard, Beth Perry, Lillian Verti, I apologize, I can't read, and Kirsten Rupinian from Conservation. And I'd also like to thank and point out that we have Officer John Longo in the rear of the hall keeping us safe tonight. Fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in front through the stage. bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit doors, as well as outside the cafeteria. And there are materials on tables where you entered about various warrant articles. I believe there are also extra warrants up here. So if you need one, please raise your hand and I'll ask a scout to give you a warrant. I see a handful of people who might need a copy of the warrants. They're in a pile here. So if you could deliver those around, that would be great. Just keep your hand up until you get a warrant if you need one. And while we're at it, I will thank these very helpful Boy Scouts. They are Ryan Grummer, Colton Simon, Gavin Montero, Andrew Mossy, and Luke Hager from Troop 63. And finally, I'd like to thank the staff and crew of Sudbury TV. We have Lynn Puro, Cliff McGann, Terry Lockhart, and Matt Cranson. Before we begin consideration of the substantive articles of the warrant, I'd like to take a few minutes to review some of the most important procedural ground rules that govern how this special town meeting will be conducted. How many of you are here for the first time? We have a smattering of newcomers. Welcome. I think it still bears some repeating to cover some of the ground rules, even though many of you are very, very familiar with town meeting protocol. Every matter that is voted on at town meeting must come in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, but a motion may be made to, quote, move in the words of the article. Unless a presenter moves in the words of the article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, he or she must explain to the hall the changes in the motion and how it differs from the words that appear in the warrant. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend, must be delivered to me and to the town clerk and the town technology administrator in writing before they are made. Please also bear in mind that you can only make a motion to amend when you are first recognized and not in the midst of or at the end of your remarks. In order to be fair to everyone, I will not entertain any motions to amend that do not strictly adhere to these parameters. If you wish to speak, please raise your card. Only registered voters of Sudbury, non-resident Sudbury employees, or elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. Once I recognize you, a Boy Scout will deliver a microphone to you at your seat. When you're handed the microphone, it will already be on. Every time you address the hall, you must begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address so that the town clerk can make an accurate record of these proceedings. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes, and all others may speak for a maximum of 5 minutes, unless additional time is granted by the hall. I have asked Layla Frank to monitor the timing of all speakers. I'll do my best to ensure that the proceedings move along crisply, and I hope all presenters and speakers understand that succinctness will be very much appreciated by me and the hall. Any motion to, quote, move the question or call the question will be taken up as any other motion made from the floor. For those of you who are new to town meeting, a motion to move the question is a request to end all debate and to move directly to a vote on the article. I will not respond to people who simply yell out, call the question. To move the question, you must be recognized by me and immediately make your motion. You cannot take the microphone, recite your opinion on an article, then try to shut off debate by moving the question at the conclusion of your comments. Please also understand that I have the right to rule that a motion to move the question is out of order if I believe that the motion is unfairly or prematurely limiting voters' right to hear questions or to better understand a motion or amendment. Some notes on voting. Each article in your warrant describes the quantum of votes necessary for a motion under that article to pass. Usually it's a simple majority, but specific types of actions, such as those relating to zoning amendments or the incursion of debt, require a two-thirds vote. Still others require a 4/5 vote of the hall. Sometimes, for a variety of possible reasons, the required quantum of a vote as set forth in the warrant may be different than the actual vote required. After I consult with town council, I will remind the hall of the requisite quantum before each vote and then ask all present to signify their votes in favor or against a motion by raising their cards. I will then count the vote and announce the result. If a vote is too close for me to call, I will call for a counted vote. Given the substantial amount of time it takes to do a count in this manner, I ask that you not request such a procedure unless you are certain that I have miscalculated the vote. I assure you that unless the show of hands is obvious, I will call for a counted vote myself. Lastly, a word about decorum and my power as moderator to sanction unruly conduct. I firmly believe that on almost all issues of any complexity, reasonable minds can differ. A healthy respect for both sides of an argument is essential if we are to achieve our goal of acting in the best interests of this town. It takes courage to rise to speak in a public forum and express one's thoughts. I ask that you treat every speaker tonight with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you may disagree with his or her point of view. To that end, I will not allow any clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after a presentation. It's within my powers as moderator to terminate the right to speak of anyone who makes disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. And with that, or perhaps one other item, we'll begin. Yes, I would ask voters to please move in. If there are any gaps in the rows that you're sitting in, to please move into the center so that we can get everybody seated. I cannot count your vote unless you're seated. And it looks like we have about 327 people here tonight, so that's excellent. And I want to make sure we can have everybody's vote count. All right, great. Thank you very much. Let's get started as soon as you're settled. So we will begin with Article 1, FY18 Budget Adjustments. I recognize Selectman Simon for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. And it's nice to say Madam Moderator this evening. Move in the words of the article as on the view graph.
Is there a second? I see one. And now I recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for a presentation.
Good evening, Melissa Rodriguez, Town Manager.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, there's a procedural issue. I'm sorry, Selectman Simon, it seems that the motion was not, needs to be read. So if you can return to to read the text of the warrant.
Let me try that one more time, Madam Moderator.
Yes, you're right.
Article 1, FY18 Budget Adjustments. Move to amend the vote taken under Article 3, Fiscal Year 2018 Budget, of the 2017 annual town meeting by transferring $30,000 from Article 3, Fiscal Year 2018, Budget 900, other and transfer, Fiscal Year 2018, Salary Reserve, to 100 General Government, and by transferring $62,500 from Article 3, Fiscal Year 2018, Budget 900, other and transfers, Fiscal Year 2018, Salary Reserve, to 200 Public Safety.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. And now I will re-recognize Town Manager Rodriguez.
Thank you. Every year, when we budget, we put a certain amount of money in a separate budget, basically, to hold for certain issues that come up. And when we budget, we can transfer within major clusters of our budget, but not in between the clusters. So basically, if we have something that is in public safety and we need to transfer money from the police department to the fire department, the town can do that. But we cannot transfer between clusters. So we cannot transfer from public safety to public works, for instance. This year, when we created our budget, we had several unsettled collective bargaining agreements. We budgeted in a salary reserve account in order to help fund those agreements when they settled. I'm happy to report that we have settled those agreements, and I'm happy to report that we created and budgeted the salary reserve account for this exact reason. And I'm proud that the town had the foresight to budget for those increases when it would have been easier to put that funds towards many other things. So what we're asking for you to do tonight is a fiscal year 2018 budget adjustment. We're asking to transfer $30,000 from the salary reserve account to general government and $62,500 from the salary reserve account to public safety. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0.
And the Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on this article? I see no one, so we can proceed to a vote.
Thank you.
The quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. On to Article 2, the Conservation Revolving Fund. I recognize Debbie Dineen for a motion.
Good evening. Move in the words of the article.
I'm sorry. Is that adequate, Barbara? Okay. Can you please read the motion as written?
Yes.
Thank you.
Move to amend Article 33 of the town bylaws establishing revolving funds as stated in the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And I recognize Ms. Dineen for a presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Debbie Dineen. I am Sudbury's Conservation Coordinator. I am also a resident at 14 Firecut Lane. And tonight, the Conservation Commission is bringing an article before you that will allow the Conservation Commission to establish a mechanism to use any funds received from incidental timber sales to offset the cost of maintaining safe and ecologically functioning conservation lands. I just want to be clear, the Commission is not, and I emphasize not, planning any large-scale timber harvesting program. We have been working with the Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation's Forestry Program. Under a grant with this program, we had three of our major properties have a forest resource management plan done. One of the properties is our King Philip Woods property, which is at the corner of Route 27 and Water Row. Okay. What you see on the slide behind me, yes, is our chairman and vice chairman working with our forester. We hired a forester under the program. His name is Gary Goldrup, and we were out there in May, and we did a walkthrough of the property to see how we can better manage our conservation lands. The goal of the plan is to provide recreational improvements for the public, wildlife habitat enhancement, cultural resource protection, biological diversity, forest stewardship education, and potential timber resource management. The first objective in the plan is to address the proliferation of invasive vines that are killing the trees at King Philip Woods. This is a map that shows our forestry plan of King Philip Woods. There's an area of roughly 2 acres where the invasive plants are so thick we'll actually be tagging the trees that we want to keep. That's the area at the bottom of your screen. It's the yellow area that's outlined in black and has three little crosshatches in it.
The only way to save the trees that have not been compromised is to remove the invasive plants. The vines are so prolific that the trees they entangle within those 2 acres cannot be saved, and they pose a significant safety hazard to trail users. The balance of that 2-acre area will be cleared, except for the few remaining healthy trees. The stumps will be removed, and the area will be harrowed and seeded to create a meadow. The meadow can then be mowed annually to keep out woody vegetation from coming back and manage the invasive plants. Some very selective individual trees that are compromising the stated goals may also be removed within the overall area shown in yellow. No herbicides will be used. We do not use herbicides on any of our town-owned conservation lands. Establishing the revolving fund will allow the commission to use funds generated from the removed trees, if any, on King Philip or any other conservation lands in the future. These funds can be used towards land stewardship, such as the establishment of the meadow that I just discussed. By using the fund, we won't need to ask for an increase in our budget line item at town meeting. We are looking at ways to help make our lands a little bit more self-sustaining, and this will help us with that goal. All this article does is establish the fund itself. We're not asking for any appropriation into the fund at this time. We may be back at annual town meeting to request an appropriation into the fund. These appropriations must be reauthorized by town meeting each year. You will be able to set the maximum dollar amount to be appropriated as part of this fund. You will be able to know the scope of the projects that the commission intends for the funding, and you will be able to decide whether or not to put any money into the fund for the commission to use for a particular purpose. Revolving funds are not new to Sudbury. They help us maintain and protect all of our assets in town, including our conservation lands. And my last slide, just shows you a comparison. On the left-hand side, you'll see an area in King Philip Woods where it's nice and healthy. We have some understory, but you can walk through it. We can have trails through it. It's safe. On the right-hand side is the part of the area we want to clear cut. You can see it's choked by vines. The trees are being strangled. They are dying. They are posing safety issues. We're going to take them out. If we can get any money at all to help us do that and offset budget line items, we'd like to do that. And that's what this article asks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dineen. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0.
And the Selectmen?
The Selectmen support this article by a vote of 4-1.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on this article? I'm sorry. Oh, yes, Selectman Simon.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. While I certainly support the functions of the Conservation Commission in keeping our woods healthy and the many benefits they provide to the town, I have some concern about the process that's being used here. The trees, which will be harvested, are capital assets of the town. And because they are capital assets, the town should retain direct control over those assets. This tends to fractionalize the assets and remove them by at least one or two steps from town control. In addition, it was suggested that the Conservation Commission needs additional funding for stewardship. Well, if the Conservation Commission needs those additional funds and wants to increase its operating budget, they certainly can make that recommendation to the town, as opposed to diverting a capital benefit or a capital asset into an operating asset. This is something we had been warned about doing for a number of years. In addition, because the money coming from those trees is a capital asset, it should be up to the town to decide how to prioritize the use of its capital. And as we have a CIAC and other committees, the Finance Committee, which makes recommendations on the use of capital. So as these funds would normally go into the general fund, the town could say we'd like to prioritize the use for this or that purpose. This would shortcut that avenue, essentially, and give a greater say to the Conservation Commission for a capital asset and not have it go through the regular funding process. For instance, this year, there are a number of requests for funding, such as our playgrounds or the playground improvement, that went through the normal process of going to the capital committees, asking if that is appropriate to the Board of Selectmen and eventually to the town. And I think that would be a better way for us to be using our capital, the revenue from capital, rather than diverting it off and essentially placing it off limits and not in competition with other very valuable and necessary projects. So while I think the concept is good, I think in practice, creating another a revolving fund that robs the general fund of the use and decision-making as to how to use those funds is just not a good idea now. We have too many probably revolving funds already which take assets from the general fund, and to have another one I don't think is in the town's best interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to be heard? Yes, sir, on this side.
Madam Moderator, I think the proposition...
Excuse me, your name?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street.
Thank you.
I think that the proposition that a few trees being cut down in the conservation land is a capital asset is it's an interesting concept. I think, though, that it requires a certain degree of proof. Can we hear from possibly the town council and other interested parties, the long-term capital committee or some others? What is it a general feeling in the town that, in fact, these trees are a capital asset?
Sure. Town council, would you like to address that?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Barbara St. Andre. I'm with KP Law Town Council. So whether the trees are capital assets or not, I think, is beyond my expertise. I don't know how much trees are worth and so on. I can say, however, that in my opinion, this article is properly before you. The town meeting does have the authority to determine that certain sources of revenue coming into the town, whether under this article or some of the other revolving funds, should go into a revolving fund. If you feel that it shouldn't, you have the right to vote no on this article, and the money will continue to go into the general fund. So in my opinion, this article is properly before you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. On the right.
I'm Rebecca Chizzo, 21 Whitehall Lane. I worked as a volunteer force for the commission starting in 2010 in King Philip. And I've got to tell you that those giants that are in there are so engulfed. You're going to lose what is a brilliant historic area and a lovely, lovely wildlife area with many different kinds of species, rare plants. And so I think that the commission should be able to have their forestry as part of their programs and to be able to use the money, because to be quite honest with you, unless you go in there and you know where the problems are and you know what's needed, you've met with the experts, you really can't say whether it's a good value or not. I know it is because I've seen them. I've got years of pictures to show you how much damage has been done from those invasive vines. They're huge. They're going to ruin the stone structures, too. So I see no point to belaboring the issue. I think they're very good stewards of the land, and they also are very good with town funds. So okay. I support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir, in the front row.
Thank you. My name is Dave Hankels. I'm at 17 Twin Pond Lane here in Sudbury. I'm on the commission. We're talking about capital assets and trees, forestry. Wouldn't we all think, though, that the 9 or 10 pieces of property that the commission is responsible for is a capital asset? And I think as a town, we have an obligation as stewards of the land to take advantage of any opportunity we have to make these forests less degraded by invasive species. So here's an opportunity to just, you know, be stewards of your own land. This is what we're doing in other areas of our town as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, sir. The town clerk has asked me for you to repeat your name and address with the microphone, please. Sorry. Thanks.
Dave, H-E-N-K-E-L-S, 17 Twin Pond Lane.
Excellent. Thank you. And that is a perfect example of how to give your name and address. So literally that slowly would be super helpful. Thank you. Okay, anyone else want to be heard on this article? Yes, I see some cards. I will start in the back and work my way forward. Yes, the woman in the dark back there.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I have a question. I think we're conflating two things. If this revolving fund is not created, does that actually have any impact on whether or not the King Philip land is properly managed as indicated in the plans?
Can Ms. Deneen address that?
Yes, thank you for that question. At this point, we don't know if King Philip will be impacted because we don't have final costs. But I can tell you that the forester that was out there did say that certainly if we could sell some timber, we're not talking about $100,000 worth of timber here. We're probably talking somewhere between $3,000 and $8,000. That makes a huge difference to us. If it's not used within King Philip, it will be used on another conservation land for a similar project. We're also looking at doing the same type of invasive species management and recreation of a meadow at the Davis Farm Conservation Area. So to answer your question, maybe not King Philip, but yes, it will be used for the same purpose.
Thank you. Again, in that same dark section of the room, I see a card. Thank you.
Mary Ann Bittner, B-U-T-T-N-E-R, 333 Peckham Road. I think conservation is a great idea. I don't think that was Selectman Simon's point. What I heard from him was that there are procedures to be followed and other groups that need to compete for our tax dollars, for their programs, have a certain procedure to follow, and that this particular article should not pass because it's asking to avoid the regular procedures that the other groups in town do follow. I hope that I understood Mr. Simon somewhat correctly.
Thank you. Anyone else? I see no one else, so unless I'm not seeing someone. Yes, in front.
It's a forest, and I was wondering.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. My name.
My name is Abla, A-B-L-A, A-B-L-A, and last name is Shokair, S-H-O-C-A-I-R, and I live on 240 Mossman Road.
Thank you.
And I was really wondering about the meadow, and why should a meadow be created within a forest instead of trees?
Ms. Deneen, would you like to respond?
Yes, thank you for that question as well. The reason that we're creating the meadow is twofold. One is to add some diversity to the biological features within the conservation land. A meadow provides opportunity for a different type of wildlife habitat, which will allow for more diversity of the species, both the flora and fauna in that area. But secondly, and probably most importantly right now, is if we create a meadow, we can come in and we can mow it annually to keep all the woody vegetation down. If we don't mow it, if we just clear it and let it grow back, it's going to grow back with invasive species again. And in another, you know, 5-6 years, we're going to be facing the same problem. So the reason's twofold: biological diversity and more permanent removal of the invasive, the harmful invasive plants.
Great. Thank you. I believe we're ready to proceed to a vote. If you are wanting your vote to be counted, you need to be in a seat, please. There are several empty seats in the second row in the center, and I see a handful in the back in front of the windows. So if you could be seated, that would be fantastic. Thank you. All right. The quantum of vote required for passage of this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 3, transfer care and custody of town-owned Landham Road parcel to Conservation Commission. I will recognize Selectman Simon for a motion.
Move in the words of the motion.
Yes, in the words of the article.
Beg your pardon. Move in the words of the article.
Excellent. Is there a second? Yes. Thank you. And I will recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you. In February 2015, the town purchased land formerly known as Johnson Farms in order to preserve the farmland of approximately 33.48 acres. It was later renamed the Landon Brook Marsh Conservation Land. At the time, the cost of the purchase was $2.9 million. Approximately $1.8 million came from a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion, $1 million from CPA funds, and $66,000 from the Sudbury Valley Trustees. The intent of the property was to be used for conservation and passive recreation purposes. That was the intent of the vote taken in the 2014 town meeting. At the time of the purchase, the deed the town received stated that the care, custody, management of the property was the responsibility of the Board of Selectmen. More typically, in Sudbury, the Conservation Commission would be given the responsibility of the care, custody, and management of conservation and preservation properties. Currently, the town is working to finalize management plans and agreements for the properties. At this time, we are requesting to transfer the care, custody, and management of the property to the Conservation Commission. This must be accomplished through a two-thirds vote of town meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee takes no position on the article.
And the Selectmen?
The Selectmen unanimously support the article.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 3? I see no one. So we can proceed to a vote. As Town Manager Rodriguez mentioned, the quantum of vote required is two-thirds. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 4, land conveyance to Fish and Wildlife Service. I'll accept a motion by Selectman Brown.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. And again, a presentation by Town Manager Rodriguez.
Thank you. The town currently owns two parcels of land that were taken for failure to pay taxes. The parcels are G12-0015, which is comprised of 12 acres and has an assessed value of $6,100. The second parcel is G12-0013, which is comprised of 5 acres and has an assessed value of $2,500. The total taxes that could be collected on these properties per year are approximately $152.56. Currently, no taxes are being collected because these properties are town-owned. Both properties have been declared by the town treasurer as not needed by the town for a specific purpose. 0013 was taken in the 1970s for a nominal amount. According to the records that I found, it was approximately $272.37. Property 0015 was taken in 2009. Taxes had not been paid since 1981, and the unpaid taxes totaled $12,097.81. According to town staff, both of these lots are not developable. They both meet the following criteria. 100% of the parcel are located with below the 100-year FEMA floodplain elevation. 100% of both parcels are within the Natural Heritage and Endangered Species Program's rare habitat designation. 100% of the parcels are within the riverfront area of the Sudbury River. 100% of the parcel is bordering vegetated wetlands. Neither parcel complies with zoning requirements or frontage. And the soils on the parcels are all wetland soils. All that to say, we can't build there. If you take a look at this map, all of the green properties are currently owned by the federal government, specifically the U.S. Department of Interior. These two orange properties are the properties we're discussing tonight. So as you can see, they're surrounded currently by federal land. Tonight, we are asking town meeting to allow the Board of Selectmen to dispose of these properties. For several years, the town has been in discussion with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service due to their interest in these two properties. If we have an affirmative vote tonight, Fish and Wildlife would begin an appraisal process, which they've already funded, and begin negotiations with the town to purchase these two lots for fair market value. This requires a two-thirds vote of town meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Town Manager. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The BOS supports this article.
And anyone else wish to be heard on Article 4? Yes, over on that side of the room.
March Peppercorn, 28 Sawmill Lane. I'm strongly opposed to giving this land to Fish and Wildlife. The appraised value amounts to about 50 cents per person, and with that, we are giving away town land on the river, which is a rare commodity. My bigger objection, though, is that the town of Sudbury does not allow gun hunting. We have bow hunting, we do not allow gun hunting. Fish and Wildlife regularly does do hunting with guns for waterfowl, especially along the river. And anyone else who lives anywhere near the river, like I do, is startled by the sound of early morning gunshots and the fear of stray bullets and the death of more wildlife. Fish and Wildlife claim that there will not be more hunters coming to the area with the ownership of these parcels because there are already hunters coming to those other parcels. But the contiguous land will mean more hunters coming, will mean more gunshots, more dead waterfowl, and more fear for the people living near that area. So I vote that we do not give this to Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir. I'm right there.
Mario Momolo, 71 Stock Farm Road in Sudbury. My view is that what's the depredation of it? In other words, what happens if we do give it away, and what happens if we don't? It's not clear to me what the advantage is of giving something away that we really shouldn't have to.
Sure. So if we don't give the land away, we'll continue to own it. We continue to not have taxes paid on it, although if we do sell the land to the federal government, they won't pay taxes as well. So there's really no tax impact at all. The only real benefit that we get is that we'll be paid the fair market value for the two properties, and we'll allow the federal government to finalize their map. So fair market value is not necessarily the assessed or appraised value. So the assessment that we have currently, the numbers that I quoted earlier in my presentation, that's just what we assess the properties at. What will happen is that they'll do a full appraisal on the properties, and then we will likely have that appraisal peer-reviewed for accuracy, and then they would pay us the fair market value of those properties. At this time, we do not know what that fair market value is yet because those appraisals have not been done. So in essence, the benefit is we get paid for them, and money would come in as a revenue.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard?
Yes, sir, in the front.
Thank you. I'm James Brownell, Horse Pond Road, Sudbury. My question is, are there trails? Is there any kind of development on the property? Is it all underwater?
I could ask, if I believe, of the moderator to have the Conservation Commissioner come up and answer that question.
Yes, I would recognize Ms. Dineen to answer that question.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you. Debbie Dineen again. As far as trails or anything on that property, the answer is no. These properties are underwater. The only way you can access them year-round is by boat. And one of the other reasons why the Conservation Commission is in favor of this article isn't because we like giving up conservation land, but in this case, these properties aren't surveyed. They probably are being hunted anyway. They're probably being hunted illegally because we don't have them posted as no trespassing or no hunting. So essentially transferring these parcels will make absolutely no change in what's going on those parcels today. And the town will get a little bit of revenue in the interim, and it will be managed, policed, and patrolled by the environmental police officers with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have anything they'd like to add? I see no one, so we'll proceed to a vote. As Town Manager Rodriguez mentioned, this requires a two-thirds vote for passage. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes by well more than two-thirds. Article 5, Amendment Bylaw, Town Property. I will recognize Selectman Giuliano for a motion.
Move to amend Article 12, Section 1 of the Town Bylaws, Town Property, as stated in the article, with the addition of the words, or another municipality, after the words, transfer to another department.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. So what is town property? Town property is the town's possessions, not including real estate. It's our chairs, our tables, our computers, our stuff. We dispose of it when it's no longer useful or when it is broken. Why are we asking to make a change? Municipal disposition of property is governed by Massachusetts General Law 30B, Section 15, better known as the procurement laws. The town also has a bylaw regarding the disposition of town property. The thresholds for disposal of property in the state law is $10,000, and in the local bylaw is $5,000. We are respectfully requesting to increase the threshold to match the state law from $5,000 to $10,000. This would create better efficiency within the town and allow us to more easily dispose of property in compliance with state and local bylaws. We are also asking to add language that would make certain that the town is using appropriate methods for disposition of goods, including requiring that we get quotes, go to auction, have a yard sale, or use an online auction service. The current law is, by law, is actually silent as to this, so it does not dictate how we would get rid of our items between $2,000 and $10,000. So this would create more stringent guidelines for us when we're getting rid of, the best way to put it, our possessions. We are also asking for an amendment tonight to our original proposition in the warrant. We are requesting to add additional language that will allow us to sell the property to other communities. And this is coming up because currently we have some property that is of interest to another community that we no longer need. And the bylaw as written does not allow us to sell these goods to another community. And that is all. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee.
So the Finance Committee recommends approval on the original article by a vote of 8-0. If the article is going to be amended, we'll have to have a quick conversation to see if we support that. But as the article stands now, we support it 8-0.
A quick procedural question for Town Council. The article that was read is the article, I mean, the motion that was read, excuse me, is the motion we are discussing, correct?
Yes.
So I think there might be confusion about your use of the term amending the original motion. You're speaking about changes you might have made to the article from now. If you could clarify that, because I think we are all talking about the same thing.
The original article, as written, did not include the language other municipalities.
Okay.
Okay, so there's actually, if you, the motion from tonight included an amendment to the original language that was in the warrant. So I think the Finance Committee did not consider the amendment.
Okay. Just want to make sure. I was confused, so I thought maybe others might be. A point of order. Yes, sir. Could you?
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. Shouldn't we have voted the amendment or put, made a motion for the amendment first, discussed the amendment, voted on the amendment, and then vote on the article as amended or not amended?
No, the motion that we received is the motion we're discussing. Amendments are to motions, not to the article. And so is the Finance Committee ready?
Finance Committee is going to take a 2-minute break to discuss.
Yeah. Point of order, yes. The one that's on the screen is the motion that we are discussing. Correct. Yep. Thank you. A point of order, yes.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I believe the confusion here is that this is that when the word amend appears in the article, it's to amend a town bylaw.
Correct.
There is no amendment to the motion on the floor.
You're correct.
That when so the all it's saying is we're going to amend the town bylaws, but we're going to change the wording slightly from what appears in the warrant.
Yes, thank you for that clarification. Finance Committee?
Committee recommends approval of the motion by a vote of 8-0.
Thank you. Selectman.
The Board of Selectmen supports this motion, including all changes from the article.
Thank you. Any discussion from the floor? Yes.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. When I look at the article as it's printed in the warrant, it says, or with the approval of the Board of Selectmen for property having an aggregate value of $10,000 or more. Now, what they were talking, we were given the impression that this is for property that is $2,000 to $10,000. The thing I'm thinking about is the Community Preservation Act, where you can build stuff in another town to meet your requirement for low-income housing. Or people could build stuff in Sudbury because they don't have any place to put low-income housing. And I wonder how that, how this article impacts the crossing of municipal properties that's in the Community Preservation Act.
Okay, I'm not sure I follow, but it sounds like town manager
follow.
Does. Okay, great.
So I don't think it would impact that instance because it doesn't apply to real estate or real property. It only applies to personal property. So I think that we're in the clear with any situation like that. Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else? I see no one.
Thank you.
Thank you. The quantum of vote required for passage of this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 6, amend legal affairs bylaw, town council. I will recognize Selectman Brown for a motion.
Move to amend Article
7, Section 5 of the Town Bylaws, Legal Affairs, as stated in the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. And I recognize Selectman Brown for a presentation.
Can you just go to slide 2, please? Okay. The intent of this article, the really big picture, is to streamline the process of evaluating town council services on an ongoing basis, periodically requiring a deliberate discussion, but not mandating an RFP process every 3 years. So the first slide, These are the first two sentences of the existing bylaw. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it starts out, at least every 36 months, the selectmen shall request proposals from legal service providers. This requires a full RFP process. The town has to generate the RFP, advertise it, legal firms have to create responses, the town has to receive the responses and evaluate them, we have to schedule and interview the candidates, and the board needs to deliberate and decide which to engage. We shouldn't engage in this extensive process unless we are seriously contemplating changing legal service providers. Next slide. This slide shows the first two sentences of the proposed bylaw. Again, I'm not going to read it all, but instead of maintaining a full RFP process every 3 years, the proposed bylaw requires an open discussion by the Board of Selectmen of whether the board thinks it's in the best interest of the town to engage the full RFP process. The third line down begins, in regular session. The selectmen must, under the bylaw, take the matter up in a regular open meeting at least every 36 months. This both reminds the board not to forget this matter, and it also ensures the discussion will occur in open meeting and be fully available to citizens. Next slide. This is the continuation of Article 7 following the first two sentences, and this is just to emphasize that Article 7 continues unchanged. We don't propose changing anything else about the process. Next slide, please. So why enact this change? The reasons are on the slide. The first two, for efficiency and for transparency, are straightforward. The last reason is what I will call seriousness, in the sense of, are you serious? Are you really contemplating changing providers? When the town of Sudbury issued an RFP for legal services in 2013, we had had numerous public discussions about evaluating legal services. We were clearly serious. 9 providers responded. They saw us as worthy of the time and effort to respond. When the town issued an RFP for legal services in 2017, we had 2 responders, one of which was our existing legal service provider who had to respond in order to be considered for continuing in that position. Given our recent change of providers and our ongoing and complicated legal actions and our stated satisfaction with our current provider, it didn't look like we were serious. It didn't appear worth the effort to bid. Issuing an RFP when the only reason to do so is the requirement of bylaw is not only a poor use of everybody's time, it reduces our credibility when we do advertise for services. Please support the proposed change to our legal services bylaw by approving Article 6. Thank you.
Thank you, Selectman Brown. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
The Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Excellent, thank you. Would anyone like to speak on this? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 7, Stabilization Fund. I will recognize Selectman Carty for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move to transfer $167,354 from free cash to the stabilization fund established under Article 12 of the October 7, 1982 special town meeting.
Is there a second? Thank you.
And I will recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you. Article 7, request to transfer $167,350 from free cash to the Town Stabilization Fund. The Town of Sudbury has a policy to maintain the Town Stabilization Account at an amount equal to 5% of the last fiscal year's general fund operating revenues. If you remember, for the last 2 years, we actually took money from this fund for various litigation items, and now we're asking to put money back in to make sure that we maintain that 5%. The current balance in stabilization is $4,407,108.59. Thank you.
Thank you. And I understand at this time the Finance Committee would like to make a brief presentation pertaining to the upcoming articles relating to financial matters. So I will recognize the chair for that presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So this is the first of about nine articles in tonight's meeting that we'll be spending money on. So these are the nine articles that are up. The Finance Committee, the first one is the Stabilization Fund, which is what we're talking about right now. The Finance Committee looked at all these articles from the proposal of the proponent. We looked at the funding source and the tax impact. In a lot of these cases, these are capital assets, so we looked at how long the asset would last and when we'd have to replace it. We looked at how the economic efficiency of it, and most importantly, we looked at the priority of how this spending stacked up with other rankings in the town. The funding source is perhaps one of the most important things to look at, is that for a lot of the articles that come before town meeting, they can get funded in a variety of ways. At the end of the day, it's nearly in all cases, it's 100% of the money, or most of the money is coming out of the people in this room. So the source is as important as just understanding the impact it's going to be on the tax bill and on the town's long-term finances. So these are all the sources that we looked at for tonight. Debt exclusion is the first one. We use that for large capital projects. You'll hear when we talk about that for the fire station. We looked at the source of that is bonds, and we looked at the possible amount of available debt we could raise as a town. It's tough to say exactly, but if you looked at, for example, comparing us versus Concord, who also has a AAA rating, we could raise $40 million, and we would just be about equal to the amount of debt that Concord's raising. So the net of that is there's a lot of borrowing left for debt exclusion. We'll talk about that when it comes to the fire station. We'll be using free cash tonight. Free cash is the money that's essentially the town finance director probably doesn't like this definition, but it's the amount of money that's left over in the town's checkbook at the end of the year is the easiest way to describe it. There's about $2.7 million in that. We'll be using that to fund a bunch of the items tonight. The Finance Committee is comfortable it was spending the money that's allocated as free cash and still having money left over for spring town meeting. CPA is another possible source of funding. There's about $3.9 million in the CPA fund. We could raise only about another $2.4 million in debt, so there's not much capacity left in the CPA for any additional large projects. There was one article brought up for CPA, which was the school playgrounds. The CPA voted not to fund it. However, we did. The Finance Committee supports funding it through free cash. We're not going to be talking about the town manager's capital budget tonight, which is around $400,000. We do that in the springtime. And we won't be doing any capital exclusions, which are one-year capital overrides that we use sometimes to support some items. So this article, Article 7, is a stabilization fund, and we simply like to keep that at about 5% of the operating budget, which is why Article 7 is up here to move money into that. So as you consider these articles, all this money competes for funding over other items, and this is a snapshot of the spreadsheet that is used to track possible capital and other purchases over the next 5 years. There's about $73 million in large capital projects. I'm sorry, next slide. There we go. There's about $73 million possible in large capital projects. As you look at this list, though, you'll notice there's some projects that they've been around a while. So there's $20 million, for example, for Fairbanks. There's $15 million on the sewer. But you're going to see there's other possible projects, such as $6 million for the town hall restoration. If you remember, we voted some design funds on that. Again, these are all estimates. This is all rough approximations, but you should be aware of how much possible projects are out there. In addition, there's about $20 million in possible rolling stock purchases and other small capital projects over the next 5 years, and we still have about $57 million in OPEB liability that at some point we're going to have to figure out how to continue to go fund. The net of it, though, is there's about $1,750 of spending over the next 20 years going to be asked to vote on tonight. For the stabilization fund that's coming out of free cash, we're literally just moving money from one account to another. The fire station is approximately $7.1 million. It's a debt exclusion. You can see it's about $81 over 20 years. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And then you can see the other articles in terms of both how they're being funded, which is free cash, and then what the vote was on the Finance Committee. There's an amount up there that's a cost to the median household. For free cash, the money's already on hand with the town, so it's actually not any additional money out of your pocket, but you should understand that is essentially how much money you had to pay for us to eventually go pay this out for these projects. And the median household value is $705,000 valuation, which pays about $12,500 in taxes. So with all that, I will report that the Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 7 by a vote of 8-0.
Thank you very much. And the Board of Selectmen for a report?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 7.
Thank you. Anyone in the hall wish to be heard on Article 7? I see no one, I think. Okay. And so we will need a majority to pass this motion. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 8, construction of new fire station number 2. I recognize Selectman Hardy for a motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $7,100,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for the purpose of constructing a new fire station 2 and appurtenant structures on town-owned land located at its present location on the Boston Post Road, purchasing additional equipment, technology, and furniture, landscaping, and all expenses connected therewith, including professional engineering and architectural services, and preparation of plans, specifications, and bidding documents, supervision of work, relocation, and borrowing costs and expense, and to raise this appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the selectmen, is authorized to borrow $7,100,000 under General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 7, or any other enabling law, provided, however, that this vote shall not take effect until the town votes to approve a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, Paragraph K. Any premium received upon the sale of any bonds or notes approved by this vote, less any such premium applied to the payment of the cost of issuance of such bonds or notes, may be applied to the payment of costs approved by this vote in accordance with Chapter 44, Section 20 of the General Laws, thereby reducing the amount authorized to be borrowed to pay such costs by a like amount.
Great. Thank you. Is there a second? Yes. I will recognize Fire Chief Bill Miles for a presentation. And as he works his way up to the podium, I invite anyone who's standing to please come find a seat. I cannot count votes of anyone who's standing in the aisles. There are a number of seats front and center, actually second row and center, so it's not as scary. And then there are some right in the middle of the very dark patch in the center of the auditorium. So thank you so much. Yes, Chief.
Thank you.
It's all yours. Thank you.
My name is Bill Miles. I'm the fire chief here in Sudbury, and I have a short presentation about replacing our fire station 2 on Route 20. As many of you may have read in the warrant, it's Article 8, and we're talking, this project is to take down the fire station that's there and build a fire station, a bigger fire station, on the same piece of property. If you look at this picture, there's a couple of giveaways about how old the station is. The station was built in 1961. That's a 1963 Ford station wagon. The other thing that gives away the age of the picture, there's no traffic jam on Route 20. So, this is the station as it looks today. In the late 90s, we added a peaked roof to it to try to take care of some of the issues we were having with the flat roof. So if we look at how long the station has been there, for 55 or so years, it's really kind of a simple thing that's happened in the town. The town of Sudbury has grown quite a bit. The fire station has grown quite a bit. The trucks have become a lot larger, and Fire Station 2 has remained exactly the same size as it always was. Another issue we have coming up is with all the construction on Route 20 due to the Metawatt project. They're going to be adding a turning lane in front of Station 2, which is going to take up quite a bit of our apron space, which is going to make it difficult to get the trucks back into the station. And probably the most concerning thing to me, I guess one of the most concerning things, is the fire station number 2 has no accommodation for female firefighters. Station 2 obviously was sized for trucks that were built in the 1960s. When we bought trucks into the 70s and 80s, we were able to get the trucks inside much more easily. You can see that when we work on the trucks now, fire trucks don't have hoods. You don't just, it's not like your automobile, you pick up the hood and check the oil. You have to get the cab tilted up. So you can see that with our new pumper that sits down there, it's a little bit of an issue. Truck has to be outside in order to do that. It looks small from the inside. It looks even smaller on the inside. You can see engine 2, the new engine packed in there. To the right of it's engine 4. The firefighters have a little bit of fitness equipment in there. Our ATV is stored there. And in the back left-hand corner, we have a pickup truck that carries a brush firefighting rig. If you look at those yellow hoses hanging off the side of engine 4, those are called Plymouth hoses. Those went around in 1961. So those attach to the diesel exhaust of the fire engine so that when it starts up, there's a big fan and a motor that draws the exhaust out. You can see they take up quite a lot of room. The firefighter's gear is stored against the wall there, and just like your garage at home, it's not only your car you have to keep in there, but your snowblower, and we have some lockers for medical equipment, some ladders, and so forth. So it's pretty tight in there. If you look at the back bumper of engine 4 on the left, and you look at the trailer hitch of the ATV trailer on the just behind it, there's about 30 inches there for the firefighters to make their way from one side of the station to the other. So when there's a call, they kind of have to wind their way from one side to the other to get their gear and then make their way back to get into the fire truck. As I mentioned, the no accommodations for female firefighters is a big issue. There's one small bunk room in that station, one small bathroom. Everybody, I hope, has driven down Route 20 and seen what's going on with the construction down there. If you look to the right, and you can see that Jersey barrier there, there's a short section of white line where the automobiles are traveling. That's where the old, I guess we'll call it now, the old width of Route 20 is. So the fire engine was able to come from either direction and turn itself up into the driveway, make a U-turn close to the front doors, and then it could go all the way back out to the white line in order to get lined up to back in. So now you can see with the poles, the old set of poles to the right there, they put new poles to the left. And just where you see the new set of poles there where all those traffic cones are, there'll be a few feet of sidewalk, and then Route 20 will immediately start. So the drivers of that big engine, too, are going to have a little bit of trouble getting themselves turned around without poking their noses out into Route 20 every time they come back. So we're going to be seeing that as quite a safety issue. So a look at the project, how much has been spent so far, who spent it, and how we got to this point today. So about a year and a half ago, I commissioned a feasibility study. We spent $10,000 on it. And anybody who's read through a feasibility study, if you can stay awake through reading a feasibility study, they talk a lot about existing conditions, and that was one of the reasons I tried not to spend too much on it. The existing conditions down there are pretty plain. I worked down there for 25 years myself. I didn't need to spend a lot of money for somebody to tell us the building didn't meet code or didn't have more than one bathroom and things like that. As part of the agreement with National Development, which I'll get into a little bit more, we had a little bit of incidental legal work acquiring some land beside the fire station, and we did spend some money on a site plan. So those of you who are familiar with the National Development Mitigation Agreement, there was $80,000 in there for funding for what we call a schematic design. So what that is, it's just the next step beyond the feasibility study. The feasibility study literally gave us a picture of a building, what we thought we might like it to look like. So after feasibility, if somebody came up to me and said, are you going to build it out of brick? Are you going to build it out of wood? I wouldn't really have an answer to that question. But the feasibility study, we meet with the architects, we meet with the designers, and we come up with a plan, we come up with a design, and we're able to get a more concrete estimate in order to come to town meeting and in order to send it out to bid. Also, as part of the mitigation funds, we used $25,000 to move some utilities. The new fire station is going to require a larger natural gas line, and it's going to require a larger water line. So we're paying now to have those utilities moved off Route 20 and onto our property. We don't really want to be calling the state next spring or next fall whenever we start this project and say, gee, I know you just paved Route 20 and put the stripes on it and put the traffic lights up, but we need to dig it up for our water line. So we want to avoid doing something like that. So I get a lot of questions when I'm different places people ask, and probably one of the most common questions is National Development paying for the new station too? Well, no, they're not paying for the station, but again, as part of the development agreement, they made some significant contributions. One of them was we did not own all the land. If you face the station from Route 20, we did not own everything from our driveway over to the west driveway, that what used to be the west driveway to Raytheon, and is now the west driveway to enter Whole Foods. So we were given lot number 6, which allows us to expand the footprint of a new fire station a little bit. Another big item was former DPW Director Bill Place knew that they were going to be building a sewage treatment plant in the middle of Meadowwalk to handle all this sewage. And he pointed his finger at me. He said, make sure you get them to take the stormwater and the sewage. So as part of the development agreement, National Development is doing that. So all the town has to do, they don't have to build a septic system or maintain it. They don't have to do anything about the stormwater. We just have to run a sewage pipe and a stormwater pipe to the corner of the lot, and National Development is going to handle all that. And they've also provided us with some traffic engineering and signal installations in front of the building. So from the feasibility study, I know a lot of you serve on boards and committees, and you've probably seen me talking about this over the past year and a half. So whenever you heard me mention the $6 million, I always smiled, and I said conceptual opinion of probable cost. So that's what came with the feasibility study. So I want everybody to realize, I know that's the number in your warrant, but that was strictly an estimate when we were very, very early into this project. So after a lot of meetings, Jim Kelly and I went to a lot of different board meetings, listened to a lot of suggestions from people. Of course, we talked to our architectural team quite a bit, heating consultants and so forth. And we did make 6 visits to recently constructed fire stations. We looked at several designs. The first couple we saw had flat roofs. In the designs, living in New England and the trouble we had with Station 2 previously, we rejected those. We did get a gabled roof design from the architect. We took it to the design review board, and they didn't really like it. But I will give them a lot of credit. They didn't say we like it. They didn't say we don't like it and send us home. They gave us some designs that included hip roofs on the stations, on the buildings. So we sent the architect in that direction and came up with a design I'm going to show you in a minute.
Excuse me.
So in addition, Facilities Director Jim Kelly and I met with the planning board who asked us.
I'm sorry, I just need to interrupt you really briefly to get a sense of the hall, whether you may have a few more minutes. A
couple minutes.
Just a couple of minutes, great. And informally, is that all okay? Does anyone object? Okay, great. 2 more minutes for Bill Miles. Thank you.
We met with the planning board, who asked us to adjust the parking a little bit on the site plan, which we did. We spoke with the capital improvements planning committee. I'll take questions a little bit later. I won't cover it right now about setting up a temporary fire station and living quarters in the parking lot at Feely Field. And, of course, we met with the Board of Selectmen and the Finance Committee. So the next slide is an animation. It'll show the building from the roof. In the front of the building, you'll see Route 20 as it starts to spin. Well, you won't see it, but that's what Route 20 is. And then you'll see the west driveway on the left side, and then the Whole Foods would be in the back of the building at the top of the screen. So you can see the hip roof. One thing we tried to keep in mind is that building is very, very visible from many sides. Jim Kelly was telling me that the opening day of Whole Foods, he went down there with his wife, and as they were driving out of Whole Foods, they said you can really see the back of that building. It's really quite visible. So we tried to make that as attractive as we could. So you can see coming along the bottom of the screen now would be the west driveway, and we have an easement over the sidewalk from National Development. So when the truck is returning, it can come up that west driveway and drive in the back of the station, and it won't be impacting the traffic on Route 20. This is a picture of the floor plan. We tried to keep in mind that when we build buildings in this town, we don't want to just be building them for 2017 or 2018. We want to make sure they don't need additions on them in a short period of time. So we do have four bunk rooms in it, accommodations for female firefighters, two gender-neutral bathrooms. That was one thing I learned as part of the architectural process. When you talk to the architects, they don't talk about men's rooms or women's rooms. Everything is a gender-neutral bathroom. We do have on the bottom left, you can see a first aid room. Many new fire stations are incorporating these. From time to time, we have what we call a walk-in medical. People will be driving down the road, somebody having a heart attack, somebody doesn't feel very well. So right now, we sit them on the front bumper of the fire truck and check them out. So this is a little bit more civilized. You can see there's a hallway right from the first aid room out to where the apparatus is stored. This is just a quick look at the site plan showing you the drive-through bays. You can see that area on the left where the parking is. You can see the handicap sign. That would constitute the width probably of the lot 6 that was given to us by National Development. This is the last slide.
Okay.
So the question is, how much will the new station 2 cost? So as I explained earlier, the schematic design is a much more accurate, obviously, as a design, a shape, a form, a floor plan. And the estimate from the architectural firm was $7.1 million. And as was read in the motion, as you can see on the plan, that covers everything that we think that it will cost, all the costs associated with this project. Obviously, this is just an estimate. The final cost will become more apparent when the building is put out to bid. And the true final cost, obviously, will not be known until the completion of the project. As Chief Nix can tell you, we participated in every Thursday there was a meeting when the police station was being built, and things get changed. I mean, it doesn't go up and down by a million every day, but doors get moved around, shelving and so forth gets moved around. So the final cost would be at the end of the project. The tax impact is listed there from Finance Director Dennis Cohan.
Thank you very much. I will now ask the Finance Committee to weigh in.
The Finance Committee has 4 members recommending approval of the article and 4 members recommending the article not be approved. The tax impact is about $81 per year for 20 years to the average household. That's with the median taxpayer bill of about $12,520 on a value of $705,000. Currently, there's about $7 million of debt retiring over the next 3 years, which is costing the average median household about $50 a year. So the net increase in the tax bill, if approved, will only be about $31 per year. And as we mentioned earlier, raising debt for a town our size and the amount of debt we currently have, there's plenty of debt capacity. So the committees generally agree that there's a need for expanded public safety capacity in the southern part of town, and the tipping point of the Meadowwalk development has made this project a priority. But the committee disagrees, however, primarily on the funding source. So for those in support of the station, the committee supports that believe that the current fire station 2 does not meet the needs for the fire department. Equipment and personnel and the replacement of the fire station as soon as possible is a high priority. As the old Raytheon property is developed, the inadequacies of the current station will become increasingly detrimental to the fire department's ability to provide services the chief feels are necessary and that residents expect. If we vote in favor of this project now, the new station will be available before all the components of the development at the old Raytheon site are complete. Those opposed to the fire station generally support the need for the station, but there's two areas of contention. First, placing the entire $7 million burden on the taxpayers is not appropriate. The project reached a tipping point with the Meadowalk project, which was not a surprise to the town. The town received over $2 million from the developer to help offset expenses exactly like this one, yet the Board of Selectmen only allocated about $80,000 to this project. The result, the Sudbury taxpayers are once again being asked to spend for this project while the rest of the money from the mitigation was spread throughout the town. The town should use other funding sources such as free cash, the remaining mitigation payments for public safety from the developer, and other sources to reduce the long-term tax impact to Sudbury residents. With better planning, this would have been possible and could have been implemented. In addition, the town should pause and consider the prioritization of this project, especially given the project's visibility to the residents. The fire station was scarcely mentioned at the town meeting in 2016, despite the Meadowalk project being the main tipping point for requiring the station. More diligence should be undertaken. Members opposed would support doing a design study at this time.
Thank you. And Selectman?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. The Board of Selectmen support this article with a vote of 4-1.
Thank you. And would anyone from the CIAC wish to be heard? I don't see. Yes. You're welcome to come to the podium if that would be easier. Okay.
Mark Howery, 55 Old Coach Road, H-O-W-R-E-Y, and I'm the chair of the CIAC, and we support this article unanimously.
Thank you. And I would ask if anyone from the Strategic Capital Funding Committee would like to be heard. Yes, the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. Yes, thanks. So, and then the Strategic Capital Funding Committee, anyone? I don't see anybody. Okay. And would anyone else like to be heard on this article? Yes, in front.
Hi, Kate Marchand, 101 Victoria Road. I attended the Park and Rec meeting because if this is approved, the temporary station is going at Feely Field, Upper Feely. And I just wanted to put on the record that when we are using the field, which is in the springtime, every night of the week for softball, and summer and fall it's used, that the fire truck is going to be leaving the field, the bays for those nights. That was one of the concessions at the Park and Rec meeting in order to get approved. And the other concession was that we have a batting cage there where the fire truck and the temporary station is going to be. And they said as part of doing that they will move our batting cage on the field up there somewhere that needs electricity. So that was part of the concession also. I just wanted to have that on the record so that when or if it is approved and the temporary fire station is put at Upper Feely, that is upheld because it is an active area for softball.
Okay.
That's just my comment.
Thank you very much. Would you like to address that, Chief Miles?
Please.
Sure.
So to explain a little bit further, just as a little bit of background, the town of Concord had a fire in their West Concord Fire Station about a year ago. And it was very unfortunate for them, but it was fortunate for us to be able to go over there and look and see what they did about temporary quarters. So they did erect a, I guess you would call it a metal building with a heater to put the fire truck inside, had doors on it, keep it warm, keep it from freezing, and a what I would call a mobile home, temporary housing. So we plan to do a similar thing at Feely Field. So we met with the Park and Rec Commission. We plan to put the mobile home, the temporary housing, up on the lawn there near where the concrete building is, where the bathrooms are, because it has water there and it has sewage, which we would need to run the housing. The temporary station, if you will, the temporary garage, will be right up against the lawn. It's only about 33 feet wide by 50 feet long. It's not a big structure. I understand what they're saying about the ball games and the parking. We can easily move the engine out of this for a period of time if it becomes an issue. We've had a lot of road construction in front of Station 2. There were paving in front of there last week, and we pulled the engine out and brought it up to headquarters for a few hours to stay out of their way. So we understand the sacrifice that the Park and Rec Commission is making to help us out, and we're going to do everything we can to make it work for them and make it work for us. Again, I'm guessing that the construction phase of this thing, the police station took about a year. I would say this would be a similar project or even less probably. There's a lot less site work that needs to go on at our lot there. You can see it's nice and flat. There's no retaining walls or anything like that. So I anticipate that should go very smoothly.
Great, thank you. Anyone else like to be heard? Yes, right here.
Jeff Phillips, 125 Hudson Road. I just have a question for Chief Miles. What's the current square footage of Station 2, and what's the estimated square footage of the new station?
Station 2 is about 3,300 square feet, and the new building would be about 9,300 square feet.
Thank you. Who else? I'll start in the dark, in the center, a gentleman with a brown sweater. Yes. Yes, a mic, please. It's coming your way. Thanks. I can't see you, but it would be nice to hear you.
Just real briefly, my name is Bill Schineller from 37 Jarman Road. I'm known in the town as a guy who hates poles and wires. And I just wanted to remark with respect to this development of the fire station and of Meadowalk. The fire station looks great. I think it's needed. I'm supportive of it being built. I just want to remark that I think it was a darn shame that, those poles and wires, even though you guys managed to plan in advance and get, gas lines run in advance underneath, and we're all living through that somehow it was an oversight of the town to not ask the developer to put that wall of wires that's down Boston Post Road underground when the opportunity ripping up the road was there.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Oh, my gosh, I'm having that moment where I can't remember. Matthews, I'm so sorry. I will not use people's names. How about?
Hi, Kevin Matthews, 137 Haynes Road. So in the context of this, this is a rather large investment in the fire department's inventory. I'm wondering if you could talk, just to put things, the entire department's context, if you could put into context what this is in South Sudbury. There's a fire station up on 117. Could you talk to the town meeting about the current status of that station and future plans for that?
For Station 3, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Station 2, the station we're talking about tearing down and replacing, was built in 1961. Station 3 was built in 1963 from the same set of plans. You'll notice that if you look at it, the living quarters are just on the other side, but it's the same building. That has the same issue as Station 2 as far as not being able to house female firefighters. I'll be honest with you, I haven't given a great deal of thought. We don't have any... We haven't done a study or anything or have any plans about that. My thought is that that is obviously more of a neighborhood up there. It certainly wouldn't support a building like this. It's one thing to put a building like this in the middle of Route 20, but I don't think we'd do anything like that on 117. I don't believe we'd ever be looking at this station that we'd like to build now. We'd like to keep run an engine and run an ambulance out of there for all the occupancies on Route 20. I don't anticipate ever running an ambulance out of Station 3. I would say that we keep an engine there. That may be something that could we could do a lot less work on. I'm not sure whether it make any sense to tear it down and build a smaller building or perhaps add it onto it. But to be honest with you, we've been spending so much time on this one. I know something needs to be done with Station 3, but I don't have any concrete plans for it. But we have given it some thought. I don't know if that helps you. I hope it does. Okay.
Yes, in the center.
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. No offense, Chief Nix, but I cringe when I look at the police station, how big it is. This fire station, you said it includes equipment. Are you going to get fire trucks through this also?
No.
Okay, so you're tripling the size of your fire station down there. I understand you got a whole bunch of development down there that wasn't there in 1961. Totally understand that. Three times the size? Do we need three times the size? How many firefighters are you going to need there? Think 30 years out. I'm not sure how far you want to think out, but I'd hate to see a huge monster building down. It looks like a nice place, your design, but it just looks too huge. The three bays make sense, and the size of the bay area where the trucks are makes sense, but the other area just looks way too big.
Okay.
I'll take that as a rhetorical comment, unless the chief would like to address it directly.
And I also have a question, too.
Chief, I leave it to you as to whether you would like to speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anything is particularly oversized in there. There's four bunk rooms there. I'll give you an example. We have a bunk room upstairs in the fire headquarters that rarely gets used as a bunk room, but we use it. We have a big training mannequin on a stretcher that we don't have anywhere else to put it, so we wheel it in there. So, when storms come up, we hire extra personnel. I'm looking at running an engine, as I said, and an ambulance out of there. There are only two people working down there now. We'd hope to have four people there soon. I've been on the department 35 years. We opened that new headquarters in 1992. I remember walking in there and thinking it was the biggest fire station I'd ever seen in my whole life. Every corner of it is jammed with equipment. There used to be a conference room that different committees would meet in, but we didn't have an assistant chief then. Now we have an assistant chief. That's his office. We were touring the Westwood station, and we were walking down the hall, and the chief said, "This is an empty office." I said, "What do you mean, an empty office?" He said, "We're building it in anticipation of using it someday." So, again, the department has grown much faster. The town has grown much faster than I would have anticipated in the last 25 years, and I think it's a reasonably sized building for the activity that we anticipate coming out of that fire station.
Thank you, Chief. Is it a follow-up question or is it a separate matter? Because I'll recognize someone else first and come back to you if it's on a different
tangent. It's a question about the debt.
A question about the debt. Let's hold off on that and let some other people be heard from, and then I'll circle back. Yes, Mr. Alwan.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. I'm hoping that we're moving into a greener world, and you're on the north side of Route 20. You've got an amazing unimpeded exposure to southern light. Beautiful design. Any chance you can put solar panels on the front of it?
I may let Jim Kelly answer the question, our facilities director, if my answer doesn't satisfy you. According to Jim, it's less expensive to put the panels on it after it's built. We do have some southern exposure there, obviously, and there is a possibility of using the east side of the building as well. So that would be something that would be easier to talk about, I guess, after the building is built. But, yes, we did talk about it. We have considered it.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, here in this sweatshirt.
Ada Vasilovsky, Singletary Lane. Chief or Finance Committee, I'm just curious if you could provide some context on how you vetted the $7.1 million cost as potentially reasonable at this point. For example, how does it stack up on a cost per square foot construction versus other towns' fire stations? Is it at the bottom, at the top, at the middle? Are there other metrics that you have looked at that tell you that this is a cost that seems that's on track or reasonable for us to expect?
So that's a good question. When we were looking at other buildings, we did ask about cost per square foot. But part of the problem is the lead time in building these buildings. In other words, when we first started talking about this, it was a couple of years ago, and even if everything got passed tonight and got passed at the ballot vote, we still wouldn't start construction for a few more months. So it's the estimate that we have from the architect does have some contingency fees in there, and he's also, the architect, is the estimator, is also thinking about the construction market being busy and prices being probably more expensive in 6 months when we're ready to go to bid than they are right now. I did have a conversation with the assistant town manager in Framingham. They're getting ready to build a new fire station over there to replace an old one that they have. You really have to read the fine print to compare it, because they've already paid their architectural fees up front. We haven't paid ours yet. But it was very comparable in square footage between ours and theirs. Theirs is a little bit cheaper because they're building theirs in a different place, so they don't have any relocation costs. About $225,000 or so is earmarked for relocation costs, which Framingham doesn't have and we do have. So different factors drive the costs, but from what we see, we think it's in the ballpark to what other surrounding, I won't say surrounding towns, but what other towns have done when they've built their new fire stations.
Great, thank you. Let's see, how many people are interested in speaking in general, just so I have a sense? Okay, a handful more, we'll take you. Yes, you.
Janie Drettler, 286 Goodman's Hill Road. I support Article 8. I think there was already a need, and there is even a greater need with the addition of Meadowwalk and all the building that's going on there currently. I just want to add to the comment about the station up on 117. Just put this out there that we just had a charrette on the Malone site on 117. So currently, that station serves residential homes, but whatever the town decides to do with the Malone property, we should consider the fire station that's existing on 117 with whatever we do with Malone in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there's someone directly behind you there, and then we'll move that way.
Adrian Sheldon, 48 Mill Pond Road. Overall, I think that the services such as the fire department, the police department, do a great job, but you haven't convinced me that we need to spend a huge sum of $7 million on this. It seems that we should be able to renovate and expand an existing building. It seems a bit like getting a new car when the tires get worn. Instead of just replacing the tires, this is an analogous situation. I'd like to know where the $2 million from the developer has gone. Basically, it's the elephant in the room seems to be that with the new development, the town is being asked to spend $7 million, and the developer is generously chipping in $80,000. So I'm just not convinced that we need to spend this exorbitant amount of money now. I would like to ask if other options such as expansion and renovation of an existing building have been considered, and why that can't happen.
We did take a look at that, sir. If you noticed in the pictures, the doors are not wide enough. The doors are not tall enough. So by the time you raise the roof up and widen the walls somehow, I mean, you'd really be looking at saving the concrete floor, which really didn't make a lot of sense. There's nothing in the building that meets the code. We just thought that renovation would be a much more expensive option than trying to start from scratch. Speaking to the mitigation money, I know a lot of people think that that the building, that we need to build a new fire station strictly because of the Meadowwalk project, but I would put the argument forth that Route 20 has been expanding for a very long time. Our calls have expanded quite a bit with the building's occupancy, such as the Wingate Nursing Home. We're up at the Orchard Hill Assisted Living quite a bit. The Coolidge property wasn't there just a few years ago. They're thinking of adding another Coolidge building. With all the condos that are built along Route 20, this, in my mind, the Meadowwalk project made this station unavoidable, but I think we would have been talking about building a fire station there even if it were not for the Meadowwalk project. The mitigation money, that was a negotiation. Maybe the town manager can speak to that a little bit more. There was money spread throughout the town between the Lot 6, the sewerage. Money was given to Park and Rec. It was given to public safety. We used some of it to build our ladder truck, to buy our ladder truck. Chief Nix used some on the radios. So in my mind, if all of the mitigation money was directed towards the fire station, we still would have needed to buy a ladder truck. Chief Nix would have needed to buy radios. The school department would have needed to buy what they bought with their money. So money's money to me. It may not have been directed exactly at the fire station, but it certainly did benefit the town.
Thank you. Yes, in the center, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I am in full support of this, and I urge the hall to vote for it tonight. We have witnessed many large construction projects in town since I've been here over the past 25 years, and the delay almost always results in a smaller, smaller building than we set out to propose initially at a higher cost. So let's vote for this tonight.
Thank you. At this point, I'm mindful of the time, and I will just ask if anyone has anything new to add to the discussion. Yes, someone feels she does. I will recognize you here in the center. And I will also recognize Selectman Iuliano after that.
Kay Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road. Could you address the question or the point that the Finance Committee raised? I mean, there were four in favor of funding this as is stated, and then four were not in favor of it. And if I understood correctly, there was the concept of the town having a greater capacity for handling debt, and therefore, rather than the taxes being raised all at once for the entire part of paying for this. I'm very confused, but it has to do with how the funding is happening. And I thought that this Finance Committee implied that there was some capacity for the town to borrow money rather than immediately take money out of the...
I'm going to let someone else answer that, because if I do it, you'd be more confused than you are.
Thank you very much.
I will ask the Finance Committee Chair to perhaps give a 10-second synopsis of what you said.
Yeah, there's plenty of capacity for debt. In fact, that's what the proposal is to go raise debt for this $7.1 million. So the Finance Committee has no issue for raising the debt that way.
Thank you. Oh, yes, sorry. Ms. Giuliano.
Okay, sorry. I just want to reinforce that the selectmen have long recognized the need for this station prior to the Meadowwalk development. As many have said, it sort of tipped us into needing to press ahead, but we had the advantage of a lot of significant coordination because of the Meadowwalk development and everything from stormwater to easements to the gas line, other things that have been mentioned. And this has been the planning and that went into this was evident in the many conversations at the planning board and the entire plan that resulted, that was brought forth to the town, including the mitigation development at the 2015, the development agreement that it provided the mitigation. When we brought this forth in 2015, we explained one of the plans when we brought the conformance recommendation and the development agreement was to build a new fire station. And I know people may argue about whether the selectmen hit just the right balance in the way we allocated the mitigation funds, but as has been noted, in each instance, whether it's for a ladder truck or police radios, it is intended to reduce the tax impact to the taxpayers. You know, some might rather have buried the lines, or there are a lot of other priorities that we have, but this was a lot of what we got in this development was in the other aspects that were contributed by national development. And then just the last thing I'd mention is that even since then going forward, again, recognizing the long list of projects that we face as a town, the selectmen has, in January 2017, we took the time to really dig down and list and schedule and articulate our prioritization and then communicated that to all these other boards, the capital boards, et cetera. And at that time, we said the new fire station was a high priority and we targeted it for doing now based on both current needs and future needs from the development.
Thank you very much. Okay. I will recognize you, and then I think we would be ready to move on to a vote. So for the last question in the center here. Scouts, yes, if you could stand. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Haley Barnes. I live at on Mary Catherine Lane, number 42, near fire station number 3. So I share some concerns that have already been voiced here recently, and I'm curious after hearing that last comment, just about whether this, I mean, if there's been so much thought over the last several years about upgrading fire station number 2, I mean, has there been also consideration about fire station number 3? It seems to me those two buildings are virtually the same age. And I guess my concern then is if we spend $7.1 or so million dollars on fire station number 2, what is the implication then for fire station number 3, which is clearly also in need of repair or rebuilding. My concern is that I didn't see it on the earlier slideshow of upcoming expenditures for the town. And so I guess in my opinion, it doesn't feel like this consideration is the most comprehensive. And also, fire station number 1, I don't know how old it is, but
25 years old.
That new fire station?
It was opened in 1992.
Wow. I didn't think it was that old.
I didn't even have any gray hair then when it was opened.
Yeah. Thank you for your comment.
Is that true? Because, well, anyway. I've lived here 20 years, and I remember it being built, so I'm wondering how that's true. But okay. On your slide, you showed a picture of the building. It looked great, but it had a conference room, and you talked about an ambulance. Are those things not existing in fire station number 1? Do we need another ambulance? Do we need another conference room? Do we need to triple the size?
There wasn't a conference room there. There was an officer room for the officer that works there, the lieutenant. There was no conference room.
Great. Thank you for your comment. I will now. Yes, I have. I am not taking. I'm not going to even bother with that because I'm ready to move to a vote anyway. So thank you for those of you who were ready to call the question. Okay, the quantum of vote required for passage of this is 2/3. All in favor, raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed? That passes by well more than 2/3. All right, on to Article 9, Fund Eversource Litigation. I will recognize Selectman Hardy for the motion. And also, I will say before we move on to that if you are standing, if you are leaving, please do so quietly. If you're standing and wish in the back of the hall and wish to participate in the voting from here on out, please find a seat. There should be plenty. And I'll give you a second to sort that out. Okay, Selectman Hardy.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $300,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Yes, thank you. I will recognize Town Manager Rodriguez for the presentation.
Tonight we are requesting the transfer of $300,000 from free cash for the purpose of legal fees, hiring of experts, and all related costs relative to litigation of the Eversource Sudbury to Hudson Reliability Project. The project, for those of you that don't know, is an underground transmission line proposed in Sudbury and Hudson along the MBTA right-of-way. Currently, the town of Sudbury is in litigation in two venues. One is in land court, and the other is the Energy Facility Siting Board. We are currently entering into the most expensive time, with hearings beginning the end of this month and slated to last for 3 weeks. In October town meeting of last year, we transferred $185,000 from stabilization. In May town meeting of this year, we transferred $200,000 from stabilization. The total spent on these litigations to date is $346,545.10. With the bills we received this month, this account will soon be at $0. With this transfer, we will have budgeted a total of $685,000. Town Council and Special Town Council anticipate that this should be enough funding to get the town to the end of the siting board process, but this does not include any appeals or unknowns. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. The Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0. The article is funded from free cash, which is equivalent to approximately $45 for a median household. There is no increase to your tax bill. However, voting against this article will not result in a refund.
Thank you. And the selectmen?
Madam Moderator, the Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Okay, great. Is there anyone who would like to be heard on this article? Yes, Mr. Schneller.
My name is Bill Schneller from 37 Jarman Road. Just going to read a letter that I wrote to the editor of the Metro West Daily News. Eversource's plan to put a high-voltage transmission line straight through Sudbury conservation lands and the source of our drinking water is an assault on our town's character, values, and public health. The permanent damage their proposed solution would inflict is completely out of proportion with the reliability need it is alleged to address. Don't be fooled. This project won't help the outages we routinely experience every time a storm takes down local distribution lines. This $100 million line, transmission line project, is all about Eversource chasing a new guaranteed revenue stream in the more profitable transmission business. We will fully pay for it in our electric bills. Eversource does not risk a dime. And in the permanent destruction to our environment and declining property values as we see historic semi-rural Sudbury become industrialized. This can all be avoided by challenging the appropriateness of the Eversource MBTA plan at the State Siting Board and in court. The town of Sudbury is taking a stand to protect us now and for generations, as our predecessors did for us in 1967 against Boston Edison. I urge all Sudbury residents to vote yes on Article 9 to fund Eversource litigation.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to be recognized? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Jerry Sherman. I live at 255 Peckham Road. And first of all, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Schneller, for your letter you wrote to the paper. I'm wholeheartedly behind you on this. I grew up in this town. I'm happy to be back. And my late father was a town moderator here way back when I was a boy. I, too, one time took a walk down the old MBTA railroad tracks back in May, and I really liked what I saw. And I, too, will, I do support this article very much, and I don't want to see high voltage wires in this town at all.
Thank you. Would anyone like to speak against this article? I do see a card, yes, sir, in the black.
My name is Tom Holliker. Do you want me to spell that?
That's not necessary. What is your address?
623 Concord Road.
Thank you.
This whole business of the litigation strikes me as really unwise. And I really don't understand it. I mean, this proposal to put an underground high voltage line along a pre-existing railroad right away seems to be eminently sensible. And the sorts of damage that have been alleged, I think, are grossly exaggerated. I understand there'll be a clearing of the order of 30 feet along the way, and one would hope that eventually this could become a rail trail that in its own way would create a clearing of something of the order of 20 feet anyway. So 20 or 30 feet, it doesn't make much difference. So I am opposed to throwing good money after bad. I mean, I think this is a little crazy.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Yes, all the way in the back. Yep.
Hi, my name is Oleg Belikos. I live 164 New Bridge Road. And if you guys ever tried to ride a bike in this town, it's life and death situation. No sidewalks, potholes, everybody driving you off the road. All other towns build the rail trails. This is a great opportunity to have a free rail trail for us, where after dinner we can go for a ride without being killed with my children. I might be the only two people here voting against it, but I don't understand throwing millions of dollars where we could have had. We don't even own that land.
Okay.
It's not even ours. It's MBTA. If they want, they can put the trains back on it. So I'd say go for it. Have a rail trail.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. I'll take a couple more in the back. Yes, the person, yes, with the beard, with the arm up in the dark.
Michael Pincus.
Excuse me, could you please rise? Thank you.
Sure, okay.
If you're able.
No problem. Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. I'm just curious, the article in the warrant says $220,000, I believe, so what changed that we need the additional $80,000?
So when we drafted the warrant article a few months ago, we did that with preliminary estimates. After that time, we filed the case in land court and got updated estimates from counsel, and the updated estimates with the new case is $300,000.
Thank you. And yes, in that same region, a few rows back, yes, you. And I'm sorry, sir, believe it or not, town procedure requires you to remove your hat to address town meeting. Fun factoid, yes. Thank you very much.
Name is Alan Wallach. I'm in 67 Thompson Drive. I have a question. Have we assessed the probability of success? My own experience with legal issues is that usually cost more than any estimate that anybody puts on the table, and it incrementally increases. So if you're going to go after this thing, my question is, have we assessed the probability of success? What's the history of success against this situation? Because it's a lot of money we're spending.
Thank you. I will ask town council perhaps to address that. Or that's not... Okay. Not, well, I guess to say that it is impossible to give an estimate of a success, perhaps, or not. No comment from town council. Okay. All the way in the back, behind the pillar, really way in the back, yes.
Renata Aylward, 265 Dutton Road. It's Aylward. I just would encourage people to support the article, primarily because there's a big gaping hole as to whether the transmission line is even necessary. So if it is not necessary, which we hope to and could possibly prove in court, then no damage needs to be done to the town. Our water supply is not at risk, and the beauty of the conservation land will not be forever harmed. So I encourage everyone in the hall to please vote in support of Article 9.
Thank you. Yes, in the front, in the Protect Sudbury t-shirt.
Hi, my name is Marie Rock. I live at 26 Whispering Pine Road here in Sudbury, and just about three houses away from where the rail trail currently as it is exists. My husband and I have lived in this town for 17 years. Prior to that, we lived in Lexington for a few years, and prior to that, we lived in the town of Woburn. Now, we lived in Woburn at the time that all of these issues came up with, you know, clusters of children getting sick, and why were they getting sick, and then all of these investigations happened. You know, finally somebody said, hey, maybe we should call in the CDC, okay, to examine why there were cancer clusters in the town. Contamination. Contamination of the drinking water. And if you live in North Sudbury, you don't live in South Sudbury, you live in North Sudbury, and you think this isn't going to affect you, if this line goes in, think again. I fully support Article 9.
Thank you. So we have heard from both sides on this issue. If anyone has anything new to add to the discussion, I would be happy to recognize you. Otherwise, it looks... yes, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I would just like to point out that there's no guarantee that even if the siting board rules in Eversource's favor, that it would go for the underground line. The above ground is still on the table. So we could still have 100-foot towers and an 80-foot clear cut. So I fully support this article and urge you to as well.
Great. Thank you. I will, again, just proceed to the vote instead of bothering with the motion to call the question. So with that said, the quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. And Article 10, Fund Sudbury Station Litigation. I will recognize Selectman Giuliano for the motion. And excuse me, if you're leaving the hall, please do so quietly so we can proceed.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $55,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. Is there a second? Yes, there is. And a presentation by Ms. Rodriguez.
My last one, I promise. Okay, Article 10, Fund Sudbury Station Litigation. Article 10 is a request to transfer $55,000 from free cash for the purpose of legal fees, hiring of experts, and other costs related to litigation of the Sudbury Station project. The town is currently involved in three separate litigations, two cases in the land court, and one at the Housing Advisory Committee. Sudbury Station, for those of you that don't know, is a 40B project proposed for a 39.87-acre parcel off Concord Road behind the town cemetery. The project has been issued a comprehensive permit by the Zoning Board of Appeals for 30 units. The developer proposal was for 250 units. In the past, we transferred $35,000 from a reserve account within the budget, $45,000 at May 2016 town meeting from stabilization, $150,000 from May 2017 town meeting from stabilization. The total with this transfer will be $285,000. The total spent at this time is $170,655.82. Town Council and Special Town Council estimate these amounts will be sufficient to finalize the current cases but not fund any appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. The Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0. The article is funded from free cash, which is the equivalent of about $8 for the median household.
Thank you. And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Okay. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 10? I see no one. Is that, that's accurate. Okay. Then I will let you know we need to pass this by a majority. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? It passes by well more than a majority. Article 11, Sudbury Public Schools Administrative Offices. I recognize Selectman Giuliano for a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? Thank you. Finance Committee for a report? Are you presenting? I'm sorry.
I'm going to comment briefly.
Yes, briefly. Yes, Selectwoman Giuliano.
Okay. The Board of Selectmen has been working closely with the Sudbury Public Schools to find a new location for the school's administrative offices. Identifying and providing space for the SPS administration is a crucial component in the town's long-term facility planning. Article 11 was just one of two approaches that the board identified last summer to present to this special town meeting in support of this effort. Following more recent developments, the school committee has focused on administrative transition issues and questions concerning school space utilization. The school committee does not support the process as envisioned in this article. The Board of Selectmen remains fully committed both to the ongoing assessment of town and school needs and to planning for the future of the Fairbank Community Center. This is the building where the administrative offices are currently located. Postponement of this article will not impede the efforts of the Fairbank Community Center City Task Force or the town staff in planning for a revitalized community center. The selectmen recognize the urgency of meeting the immediate needs of the senior center and the park and recreation department and the importance of developing a responsible design for our community center. While that work continues, the selectmen will pursue a parallel path, working collaboratively with the school district to find alternative space for the SPS administrative offices. The selectmen will help develop a plan for these offices, even if a temporary solution is required, to support the best outcome for the future of the Fairbank Community Center. In light of this changing process to identify appropriate administrative space, and in recognition that the Sudbury Public School Committee does not support this article, we ask your support for the indefinite postponement of Article 11.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
The FinCom report was that this item was to be funded from free cash, which is equivalent to about $22 for the median household, which would have meant no increase to the tax bill and likewise no refund. The Finance Committee did not recommend approval of this article by a vote of 0 in favor, 7 opposed, and 1 abstention. First, the committee does not believe we need a solution for a suitable The committee does believe we need a solution for suitable office space for the administration somewhere in town. However, the Finance Committee does not support the article for a variety of reasons, depending on the member. But there are two common themes that emerge from the discussion.
First, Excuse me, I'm just curious. We're talking about a motion for indefinite postponement at this point.
But we deliberated on the article as was presented, so this is our finding.
Okay, proceed.
First, the town lacks a long-term strategy or plan for dealing with the office needs of the entire town. Looking at the needs of the Sudbury Public Schools in isolation could set us up for the same conversation in 5 or 10 years down the road, just to have to repeat the exercise for another cost center. The town will be looking into should be looking into global space needs, the construction of flexible office space that can support multiple uses for the town today and in the future. While we cannot predict what we will need in 10 to 15 years, we can safely say that constructing an office space building for 20 employees is not the way to go without a plan. The Finance Committee would rather see that money allocated for a town-wide plan that provides us flexible space for the next 20 years and takes into account the space the town already has at the Flynn Building, the White House Preschool, Frost Farm, Town Hall, the Grange Hall, as well as other town buildings. Second, Sudbury Public School Committee does not support the article, and as the SPS Committee administration are the beneficiaries of this article, the committee feels their support should be critical.
Thank you. I could ask for a report from the CIAC, although I'm not sure since you're good. Okay. And I will assume the Strategic Capital Funding Committee has not suddenly shown up to report on this. Is that accurate? Okay. And so I will now see if anyone has anything to say about indefinite postponement of this article. I see no one, so we can proceed to a vote. We need a quantum of vote. Is the majority all in favor of indefinite postponement? Thank you. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 12, Sudbury Public Schools Playground Modernization. I will recognize Jim Kelly, the Combined Facilities Director, for the motion. Again, if you're leaving, please try to do so as quietly as possible. Thank you.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $275,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. Is there a second? Yes. And I will recognize Superintendent Ann Wilson for the presentation.
Several people joining me, and we're going to do our best to stay within that 10 minutes. I'd like to introduce Stephanie Juriantz, Director of Early Childhood Education for the Sudbury Public Schools, and Lucy St. George, member of the Sudbury Public Schools School Committee. So we're here today to talk with you about playground modernization. Okay. So the goal of this article is to provide safe and accessible playgrounds for all SPS students and Sudbury residents. Modernizing these playgrounds to meet the current codes and regulations for accessibility, for example, ADA Title II and the Massachusetts Architectural Access Board. And then finally, renovating and modernizing all elementary playgrounds is a multi-year process. So over the next 2 to 3 years, we expect to modernize all 4 elementary playgrounds. So this article represents only phase 1 of this multi-year plan. So a little bit of the background for this article. We've had ongoing maintenance on all of our school playgrounds over the years. At the May 2017 town meeting, we requested funds to provide necessary repairs for safety and upkeep. Additions to playgrounds through PTO donations have been wonderfully accepted and appreciated, and all of those donations needed to meet the current codes for ADA compliance before approval by the school committee. This effort, related to Article 12 and to the ongoing plan for modernization of all 4 elementary playgrounds, is a coordinated and collaborative effort, including town and SPS employees, communities, the community, and parent volunteers. So the need, why now? Despite consistent and ongoing maintenance, SPS playground equipment is aging. The typical lifespan is 10 to 15 years, and many of our larger structures in certain sections of each of our playgrounds is from 16 to 20 years old. Many of the older structures do not meet the 2011 ADA regulations for playground accessibility, and the playground surfacing no longer meets the current code requirements. So who has been involved? I stated that this has been a community effort. So Jim Kelly, the Shared Facilities Director, Stephanie Juriantz, our Early Childhood Administrator, Joe Kopchewski, our SPS facility supervisor, teachers, principals, SPS administrators, Jean Nam, who you'll hear from later, parent and organizer of a community group supporting this playground modernization, and parents. So I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie to talk just a little bit about the plan. Our phase one is to modernize the Haynes Playground. That is where our greatest need for accessibility is for the upcoming school year.
Sorry to interrupt. A quick procedural point. Stephanie, are you a Sudbury resident?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Then the procedure for that is that in order for you to address town meeting, we need to get permission from the voters here. So I will entertain a motion to recognize Stephanie, whose last name I don't know.
Jurian.
Jurian. Okay. And I see lots of motions for that.
Town employee.
I think it's only town. Well, town employee. All right, never mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Stephanie Jurians, the Early Childhood Administrator for the Sudbury Public Schools, and I'm about to speak about year one of a multi-year hope and dream for our schools. But I want to highlight a couple of key points. As Dr. Wilson mentioned, you know, number one, this project arrived, you know, from three very different perspectives. We have the voices of school administration representing the students and the staff members who are on the playgrounds daily working with our teams. This also comes to us working from the eyes of our building and grounds department and our team on our building maintenance, who Jim Kelly represents and his team, and also from the eyes and the perspective of parents involved in our community. So I think that's an important part to really consider, that we're coming from three different spheres. We're really asking for the town and schools to partner with this endeavor. We really believe that this is something very powerful and important with a shared cause and vision for our town of Sudbury. Thirdly, this is timely. Our equipment is aging. It's requiring quite a bit of maintenance, and we need to be forward-thinking and long-term and really kind of bring a community together to really put some plan in place to address some of the immediate needs of accessibility and safety concerns, both in the immediate future and long-term. And lastly, of those points I want to highlight, this is for all students and all families for the entire community. Our playgrounds are utilized on the weekends. They're utilized at least 180 school days a year, and all summer long, as well as every school vacation, and enjoyed by families throughout the ages visiting our playgrounds. So just to talk about, you know, if we are endorsed tonight, which I'm hoping we will be, Haynes Playground, phase one, you can see up here, is for the FY18 plan, we are hoping to start with this project and really, you know, start with a group of invested constituents at the Haynes School Playground, where I'm talking about school administration, I'm talking about teachers, you know, all support staff, therapists, PTO members, our building and grounds department, the voices of students. We would like to pull together the community to really capture as many voices as possible to make this a joint mission. The team would design and plan over this winter month and hope that we can execute the project, be ready to install for the summer. So just kind of focusing on the servicing, you'll see here for this map here, there's area 4 in the distance. That is the area we're going to be focusing on the surfacing and a structure. And the other three areas are primarily just the surfacing of the playground that needs addressing. Am I doing this right? This clicker? This is some photos of the Haynes Playground as of now. And we're asking for $275,000 to come out of free cash. This includes, as I mentioned, the new structure in Area 4, which is currently 15 years old and no longer ADA accessible. ADA compliant, let me say. The poured-in-place surfacing would replace all the wood chips, which, according to the state of Massachusetts, is not accessible. Hardscapes, as well as the insulation, and this would also take into consideration all elements of the playground, freestanding, that are existing and up to code. We want to maintain things. We want to really improve where needed and be fiscally responsible about how to maintain things that are already in good form. So I'm going to turn it right back. Thank you.
So just a little bit more on the funding. We will actively seek grant opportunities for this multi-year project. For Article 12, there will be no school district operating funds used, just hopefully if we pass tonight, we'll have the free cash to use for the phase one, which is the Haynes Playground. No new taxes will be support this article, and there's strong community support for this playground modernization through an organization called Play Sudbury that was established by resident Gene Nam. Future cost savings due to new surfacing and discontinued need for mulch replacement. We will not realize that until we have everything in place because we will continue to replace mulch on an annual basis at the other playgrounds. So there's broad support, and we'd like to thank all the committees in town that listened to the presentations. I'd like to thank Jim Kelly and Stephanie Juriance for being presenting the project to multiple community committees and to multiple community groups. The following committees have unanimously supported this project: our school committee, Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, CIAC, and the Parks and Rec Commission. So again, our goal is to provide safe and accessible playgrounds for all SPS students and Sudbury residents. Thank you.
Thank you. And the Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of the article by a vote of 8-0. The article is funded from free cash, which is the equivalent to approximately $41 for a median household. Some other aspects of the article you should be aware of. So as you mentioned, this is part of a multi-playground effort, so you're going to get additional articles later on to fund this. Second, while we're reducing the operating cost, what we're doing is we're moving the operating cost over to a capital expense, so going from wood chips to these other surfaces. So these surfaces are also going to wear out, so in 10 to 15 years, these same capital items will come back up again, similar to what you see with the turf fields. And while groups inside Sudbury might fundraise these efforts, right now that can't be guaranteed. So soon, in 10 to 15 years, these articles will return.
Thank you. Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
CIAC have an opinion to share? No. Okay, I will open it up for discussion from the floor. Who would like to speak? Yes, in the purple in the aisle. You may, what's that? You have a PowerPoint? That's fine, as long as it's slides and it's within 5 minutes. Okay, thank you. While he's setting up, you can share your name and address for us.
Sure, of course. Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road.
Great.
Lots of screens. Okay, hi. So I'm Jean Nam, and some parents and I, some grandparents, a lot of people, got together. We formed a group called Play Sudbury. So I just want to go through, I just want to expand on what Dr. Wilson said about some of the fundraising that we're going to do. Quick recap that the time is now. Our playgrounds are reaching end of life. We're not compliant with federal and state regulations, and that funds will not come from the school operating budget. Article 12 will not cause a tax increase. And the new equipment will be physically and cognitively challenging to all students. So who are we? Play Sudbury. We're parents, we're grandparents, educators, and just community supporters. We share this common goal of bringing our playgrounds up to compliance and also upgrading them. And we're going to work together to raise some money. So, fundraising. Smile Mass, an amazing organization right here in Sudbury, has offered to be our 501(c) umbrella. So we can operate under them and fundraise in a tax-exempt manner. We plan on doing major donor fundraising, naming opportunities for equipment, amenities, benches, all those sorts of things. And we also plan to do peer-to-peer fundraising. Buy a brick, create a garden stone. We've had very early discussions, which I need to revive, with the Boy Scouts and maybe some vocational schools making some, doing some in-kind donations for us. And one of the thoughts that was just spit out like 2 weeks ago was maybe we'll try to do a yearly event. A playground-to-playground run bike was an idea that went out. just as a way of every year raising money to address some of the current concerns that FinCom brought up about how in 10 or 15 years we may need to do this again. And then grant opportunities. This is what Dr. Wilson alluded to. So because we do have the backing of Smile Mass and we can operate as a 501(c), we are able to apply for some grants under the 501(c) umbrella and some grants working with the town. So some of the, I won't read them all, but I'll just talk about a couple. The Cummings Foundation, we have a Cummings building on 117 here in Sudbury, and the Cummings Foundation has moved most of their property into their foundation. So revenues that they get from the rents and leases for that office space goes directly into their foundation, and they're giving it away. So we've applied for one of their 100K grants, and the only stipulation is that the money goes back into the community where their building is. We've also talked to Sudbury Foundation. They were kind enough to give us a two-week extension so that we could know the results of town meeting before we finalize that application. And, you know, this is, again, just a list where we're starting from. Banks, Home Depot, Shaw's, Lowe's, Massachusetts Office of Disability. These are all possibilities for us, and hopefully tomorrow we can just kick it all off. So let's do this. Alone we can do so little. Together we can do so much. Thank you again to all of the town committees for listening to our presentations, and thanks again to the administration and to the facilities department for all their help in this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this article? Yes, sir.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. You can tell from the color of my beard that I have no kids at Haynes at this point in time. But there was a time when I had four kids at Haynes, and I was almost a one-man parents organization rebuilding playground equipment. I spent like 1,000 hours, I think, rebuilding playground equipment out of tires and things like that back in the early 80s. At any rate, this is the second time around. I mean, these things deteriorate, and they need to be redone, and I surely think this is an appropriate use of town funds. And I'm not speaking for the Park and Recreation Commission, but you must note that the Park and Recreation Commission unanimously supported this article, and Park and Rec does not supervise the playground equipment at the schools, but as a parallel group, we felt it was very important, and we are currently on making certain that our playgrounds, particularly over at Haskell Field, are accessible, and we're going through looking at replacing the play and pour surfaces over there at Haskell Field. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, a few rows back on the aisle.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I've had a long objection to the way the Sudbury schools put articles on the warrant in regard to financing. They say, to see how much the town will vote. No number at all. Now, they said this is going to be a multi-year project. So they're going to be coming back year after year after year. What happened was when they gave us the $43 million schools, all schools at once game, they said to see how much the town will vote, and the amount was then later introduced into the report. And that's the way the game has been played. It's to see how much the town will vote, and then the number is in the report. This time there's no number in the report.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and so I think that this has to stop. What is usually said is to raise and appropriate so much money, or any other sum, saying that this can change, That's what COLA is. Or any other sum means this can change. But this is our estimate. And then that is what you give, what your best estimate when the warrant goes to press. And then when you come to town meeting, if it's different, if you say or any other sum, you can adjust it. But I think that we have so much of our free cash is being spent before we can deal with things that we need to do, that I think that they should, it's a procedural thing that they should do in the future, is to tell us that what they think it's going to cost when they submit the article to the warrant.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to speak? Yes, in the back on that side, in the red.
Hi, Leslie Strong from 200 Hudson Road. I would just like a clarification of the monies. The group is saying that there'd be no tax increase, but I thought I heard the Finance Committee say that it would be, $45 increase for the median household. Is that correct, or did I hear it wrong?
I will recognize someone from the Finance Committee for that.
So the money's free cash, so we've already collected the money from units in the free cash account. So it's not going to impact your tax bill, but it's still essentially your money. It's just it's already in the account. You're not going to get a refund if we don't spend the money, but we are spending what essentially would be $45. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Rather than just say it's free cash and just put out a vague number, it's just like we're trying to make it so you understand exactly what it costs.
You'll get more somewhere else. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I don't see anyone. I think we can. I'm sorry. Back behind the pillar. Yes.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I'm just a little bit curious. I've seen a playground report by a certified playground inspector, and there were some concerning things in that report. And I'm just a little confused as to why the funding for this wouldn't have been all at once, and so you could plan and progress in, you know, doing all the playgrounds and upgrading them without having to come to town meeting twice a year for funding.
I can ask Dr. Wilson to address that.
Yeah, there was consideration to coming for all four at once. However, the ability to get the work done within a summer so that the playground is ready for the fall would be problematic if you did four at once. We're just embarking upon this as something that hasn't happened for many, many years. And the thought was that if we did one first, we could have that experience. And then we are being very upfront with saying that, yes, we will be coming back. The goal is to do all four as soon as possible. We wanted to address the one that had the most accessibility issues first. So, of course, we could have. The total amount for all four at this point, given what has to happen at each playground, would be approximately $1.3 million. So tonight we're asking for $275,000 to address the Haynes Playground only.
So, I'm sorry, may I ask a follow-up question?
Yes, you may.
So of that 1.3, you said 1.3, correct?
Correct.
Does that that includes or does not include projected private fundraising?
That does not include any fundraising at all.
So
that includes no. That would be if we had not one penny of fundraised money, $1.3 million. And so any fundraising could offset that in the future. And if the fundraising is successful when we come to you at town meeting in May, we would obviously readjust the amounts by then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think we're ready for a vote on this, unless there's... Oh, I'm sorry, yes, in the plaid. In the... Several scouts competing to see who can get there first. Thank you.
Jennifer Roberts, 14 Griffin Lane, and I understand there might be some type of penalty if a town is not in compliance with ADA standards, a fiscal penalty, and I was wondering if you could speak about that.
There's always the possibility that there is a fiscal penalty if you are out of compliance. And that's simple as that.
Great. Thank you. All right. One more comment in the center. Sorry, it's very hard to see you. And while the mic is working its way back, I just want to say thank you to the Boy Scouts tonight. They're doing an excellent job. All right, thank you. Go ahead.
Janie Dretler, 286 Goodmans Hill Road. If we do one now, is, and I'm referring back to your comment about a legal issue, is there a legal risk greater if we do one now and put off the other three later?
It's always hard to estimate what the risk is. There's always a risk. We know that we need to make some changes. However, we have made improvements. We have made upgrades. We have made repairs. So we've put forth a good effort. I have no crystal ball. I wouldn't know where we would end up, but there's always a liability associated when you're not in compliance.
Okay, thank you. I think we're ready for a vote on this. The quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 13 will be the fastest because it has been withdrawn. On to Article 14 to update the master plan. I will recognize Planning Board member Steve Garvin for the motion. And again, if you're leaving, please be silent so we can proceed with the business and hopefully wrap this up tonight. That's my goal. So
that's all our goal. Good evening, Steve Garvin, Chairman of the Sudbury Planning Board, 26 Bowditch Road. I move, in the words of the article, to raise, inappropriate, or transfer funds in an amount not to exceed $75,000.
I'm sorry, the article... Yeah, sorry, I was...
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $75,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. I had a moment of lapse. That's why we keep town council nearby. Oh, and is there a second? Sorry, it's clearly getting late. Yes, lots of seconds. Excellent. And now I will recognize Steve Garvin for a presentation.
Great, thank you. So last spring, the town manager signed the community compact with the lieutenant governor, affording us grant money for various municipal functions. One aspect was funding for the master plan, in which we received $25,000. The stipulation with this grant funding is we must have a master plan completed by June 30th of 2019. Therefore, we are working quickly to find other avenues of funding. A master plan typically will cost between $70,000 and $100,000 to complete. The Board of Selectmen, move the next slide, actually. The Board of Selectmen for fiscal year 17 through its fiscal year 18 identified a townwide planning among their goals. They prioritized it as high. Massachusetts General Law, Chapter 41, Section 81D, states that a town shall make a master plan and shall update it or perfect it from time to time. While there's no definitive timeline for that, typically, they're looking for a rule of thumb of every 10 years. Ours is from 2001. It is due to changes in population growth, land uses priorities, and changing goals for the community. The master plan is advisory and does not impose additional requirements or regulations on the town. It can provide a basis for future regulatory changes that are desired by the community. The purpose of the master plan is to provide a guide for the town's future that will help town boards and organizations coordinate their regulations, decisions, and actions. The town plan acts as a guide for all development and furnishes public bodies with a long-range guide. The requirements of the master plan, as stated, are set forth by Mass General Law to have land use and growth management, housing, economic development, natural and cultural resources, open spaces and recreation, services and facilities. So all those things would be considered within this master plan. Some of the opportunities for that are grants and fundings. And rather than react to proposals or unexpected changes, the master plan gives the town a way to guide decision-making regarding the future so that these decisions can be made in a more systematic and deliberate manner. This is also helpful in applying for grants because it demonstrates a proactive approach. Having a plan provides for a stronger context. I implore you to pass this and, if passed as a community, to actually come and support and work on a new master plan, because that is what we want, is have this community that has been here for town meeting to also help what we want to do and guide for the next 10 to 15 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garvin. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports the article by a vote of 8-0. Article is funded from free cash, which is equivalent to approximately $8 for medium household. There is no increase to your tax bill.
Thank you. And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
And anyone wish to be heard on this article? I see no one. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Mr. Matthews. Here it comes.
Hi, Kevin Matthews, 137 Haynes Road. I just have a question about the scope of the master plan. We heard earlier a suggestion that there was space planning throughout the town for offices, et cetera, that needed to be done. And I wonder whether this would encompass that, and if not, it has there been any thought of how much more would be needed to also include that?
So while space gets touched on in a master plan, that's truly what's considered a facilities study, and that is typically a different study undertaken, not through a planning process or not through Mass General Law.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? I see no one. The quantum of vote for this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Yes. Oh, no, I apologize. I need to revise my declaration. Can I just do that? Okay. That passes by well more than a majority. And now, before we move on to Articles 15 and 16, I just those pertain to Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, and I want to bring to the attention of the hall the fact that my husband, Gerald Quirk, is a member of the LS School Committee. I have conferred with Town Council, who has advised me that I may preside over debate on these two articles without violating state conflict of interest laws. In addition, and probably more importantly, I believe I can do so fairly and impartially. And I have also filed with the town clerk the necessary disclosure form as required by Mass General Laws, Chapter 268A, Section 23B3. Thank you. So now I will have us move on to Article 15, replace the Gym 4 floor at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. I will recognize Selectman Carty for the motion.
Thank you. Moving the words of the article with the sum of $42,985 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Yes, thank you. And I will recognize Lincoln Sudbury Superintendent Bella Wong for the presentation.
Good evening. I will be presenting two items from Lincoln Sudbury tonight for your consideration. This is the first of the two. It's the replacement of the LS Gym 4 floor. The floor is original to the school when it opened in 2004. The surface is now slippery and worn and wavy. Educational programming, actually I'll show you pictures. Educational programming has been adjusted to limit activities that require hard, solid footstops or planting. It is the most highly utilized gym by students in youth sports. Our facilities department has exhausted all currently available sealants to address the problem without success, and so the floor system needs to be pulled up and reinstalled properly with a new floor. So you can see some of the waviness. The estimated project cost totally is $50,000. Sudbury's portion is $42,985. The Lincoln portion is $7,015. The proposed bid requests would be made in the winter, but the proposed date of repair would be in the summer. CIC approved. The Sudbury Board of Selectmen also approved. The Lincoln FinCom approved consideration of the request, and Lincoln Capcom is approved. And breaking news, Lincoln Board of Selectmen approved tonight, just 2 hours ago. So has support of all the committees in the towns, and so is here for your consideration.
Thank you. Would anyone, the Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports this article by a vote of 8-0. The article is funded from free cash, which is equivalent to $7 for a median household. There is no increase to your tax bill.
And the selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 15.
The CIAC? Anyone here? You are? If you could you wait for a mic, please? Thanks.
The CIAC.
I'm sorry, I need your name and address. Thanks.
Susan Chaffee, 140 Morse Road. The CIAC unanimously supports this article.
Thank you. The Strategic Capital Funding Committee, anyone? Yes.
I've been here all the time, but
I'm
didn't
sorry.
Think you needed me.
I'm glad it wasn't.
This was approved unanimously by the committee. Oh, Tom Travers, 32 Old Framingham Road.
Thank you very much. Would anyone like to be heard on this article? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Helen Marie Casey, 85 Poconocut. Superintendent, if I may ask you a question directly, why is this outside of the Lincoln-Sudbury budget that we approve at annual town meeting?
This is a capital request, so the budget that we presented at the annual town meeting will be for the operating budget.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, over here. Ms. Dreitler, I think. It's very dim.
I don't know if this, Janie Dreitler, Goodman's Hill Road, I don't know if the question was answered. I believe at the Board of Selectmen meeting, one of the selectmen asked if there was an attempt to go back to the installer of the floor or the manufacturer of the floor to find out if there was a way to have some funds.
Right, and so my understanding is the facilities department worked with the installer for many years, but the installer is no longer in business. But even so, the facilities department has used pretty much anything that they can find to address the problem. So again, it's slippery and it's wavy, and the surface is uneven. It's still highly utilized, but we've modified the programs that we're using in that space.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Tom Holliker, 623 Concord Road. Has the cause of this damage been determined? And if the cause has been determined, could it be corrected, and might that be sufficient to correct the damage?
Right, and so they have been working on it for years. They've expended all the options that are available, and so they can't make the surface wavy, and they can't make it less slippery. But they have been working on. They've exhausted all options in trying to fix that. So right now, the solution really is to dig the whole thing up and reinstall a new flooring.
But if you've not traced down the cause, laying down of new floors might result in the same problem.
Actually, we do know what the cause is, but it can't be addressed through anything that we have available to us. It has to be actually taken out and reinstalled. Yeah.
Well, what is the cause?
It's been here since 2004, so some of it is wear and tear, but it wasn't installed properly at the start. If it had been, probably life expectancy would have extended past to where it is now. but it is from 2004 to 2013, so it has been used for 13 years.
Okay, thank you. I think we're ready to vote on this one. The required quantum is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. And on to Article 16, the Cooling Tower Reconstruction Service, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Oh, right, okay, the clerk who is keeping me on my toes reminds me that it is 10:31, and our town, I have a little thing to read to you, right for this very reason. Our bylaws require us to adjourn after we finish debate on whatever article is pending at 10:30, unless I get permission from the hall to continue. I'll let you know we have Article 16, which is similar to the last one, and then the Article 17, and then Article 18. So it's only two more articles after the next one. So I guess that's three, really. But in any case, may I have a motion to extend this meeting until we are finished with all the articles in the warrant? Okay, and a second? Great. All in favor of finishing business tonight? Oh, and I'm sorry, the required quantum is 2/3. Okay, could I have that again? Thank you. And all opposed? Excellent, thank you. It's well more than 2/3. So let's get this done. All right. Now I will recognize Selectman Carty for a motion under Article 16.
Thank you. Moving the words of the article with a sum of $94,567 to be transferred from free cash.
Oh, is there a second? Thank you. And I will recognize Superintendent Wong for a presentation.
Okay, great, thank you. The LS Water Cooling Tower is a critical part of our cooling, our air conditioning. And so what happens is it's a big tower that holds all the water under a closed system, and the water comes in the top, it flows down a honeycomb PVC filter, and the water cools as it comes down. As it goes down, it comes back into the building and circulates through all 319 heat air exchange pumps that are here. And then it warms the water. The water goes back out to the cooling tower, and then the cycle continues. So here is... So our major repair is needed. It actually was put in place in 2002. It was used for 2 years to cool the building where they built it before we opened in 2004. What we're asking for is a repair of the galvanized steel walls that hold up the towers. The rust is occurring at the lower point of the vertical insertion points, and the PVC honeycomb is layered with hard deposits, and that's really from a result of the hard elements in the water that run through it. This is where it's resting at the insertion points at the bottom. And this is the honeycomb, the PVC honeycomb, and you see the deposits that are accumulated there. And again, the total projected cost is $110,000. Sudbury's portion is $94,567. Lincoln's portion is $15,433. Actually, the proposed date of repair would be this December. If approved here, the funds would be released for us to be able to do that. The repair of the cooling tower can only be done in the winter when we don't need the air conditioning. So it can be done December to February, but optimally for us, it would be in December. Approval by CIC, Sudbury Board of Selectmen, the Lincoln FinCom, Lincoln CapCom, and again 2 hours ago, the Board of Selectmen also approved, pending approval at this town meeting.
Thank you. And the Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee supports the article by a vote of 8-0. The article is funded from free cash, which is equivalent to about $25 for median household. There is no increase to your tax bill.
Thank you. And Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 16.
Would the CIAC like to speak? I think it's a little cleaner just to do it the usual way. Thank you.
Susan Chaffee, 140 Morse Road. The CIAC unanimously approved this article.
Thank you. And the Strategic Capital Funding Committee?
This was approved unanimously also. Tom Trevor, 32 Old Framingham Road.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on this article? I see no one. The quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All in favor, please raise your card. Thank you. And opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. Article 17, the bottle ban repeal. A motion. I will recognize Selectman Hardy for the motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Yes. And I believe the presentation is to be conducted by Daniel Ken. Are you here? Okay, great. Would you please come forward, and I will ask the hall to approve Mr. Ken giving a presentation since he is a non-resident. So I'll take a motion to allow Mr. Ken to speak. Thank you. And a second? Great. That passed by well more than a... Oh, I didn't vote. Okay, then. This is why town meeting should adjourn at 10:30. So, may I have a vote all in favor of Mr. Ken speaking? Thank you. Any opposed? Okay, it passed by well more than a majority. Go ahead, Mr. Ken. Thank you.
Thank you. A recent article passed by a handful of voters at town meeting banned the sale of single-use unflavored plastic water bottles under 1 liter in size in a retail setting. Other identical plastic water bottles are still allowed to be sold if they contain any flavoring, carbonation, or electrolytes. The only purpose this law ultimately serves is that it hurts small business in the community. I should mention that I own Sudbury Coffee Works. Until a true ban occurs on the manufacture of these type of bottles, any merchant in a town that is unable to sell water will be at a competitive disadvantage. Furthermore, as any flavored, especially water, is marked up over 200% over regular water, every merchant will lose money on a daily basis as a result of the ban. The original intent of the ban, which is noble and well-meaning, has the unintended effect of punishing small business. The people who want water will still buy water bottles despite this law. They will just buy them elsewhere. Small business owners are finding it, increasingly difficult to do business in this town and in the state. Laws are continually passed at a local and state level with seemingly no regard. Additional fees and decreased revenues as a result will eventually make it impractical to operate a small business. A small business owner is not guaranteed. There are no benefits. There's no health insurance. There's no paid vacation. There's no sick days. Yet those who have all that are creating laws. We're choking out small business. Please do the right thing. Bring your own reusable water bottle. Encourage your friends, co-workers, and neighbors to do the same. Lobby your local and state reps to change the way bottles are manufactured, but don't punish local business owners who have families to support. Please vote to repeal the use of the ban on single-use water bottles. There's just a couple of points that I want to address, and I appreciate everybody's patience. I know it's been a long night. Excuse me, my throat is really dry, but I was afraid to bring in a water bottle to this meeting. just a couple of points from a couple of articles that were written subsequent to the article that I wrote. One mentioned that our environmental health is under attack by administration who wants to roll back hard-won air and water pollution protections. I just want to sell water. I don't want to repeal any water and environmental protections. It's the healthiest item in my cooler. A lot of people
want water, and I think it's just the right thing to allow people to have the right to choose to buy what they want. And as far as the other major point that was brought up was that there's much litter that occurs because of the water. And I go for a pretty long walk most every day, and over the past couple months I've been very observant of what kind of trash and litter is on the side of the road. And in descending order, what I see the most of by far is alcohol-related products, followed by lottery tickets and then bags of various fast food products. I do rarely see water bottles, which tells me that the majority of people do care and that they are recycling. I think that we all basically want the same thing here. We want a better environment for our families and for their families. And I do everything I can personally to do the right thing for the environment. I give a discounted price for those who bring back their own vessels, whether they be for coffee or for water. I'm very vigilant with my employees about conserving water. I have a recycling dumpster. I have a recycling facility within the business, and it includes all types of bottles and refuse. So again, please encourage you to bring your own water bottles to work. Encourage you to ask your friends and neighbors to do the same. And I just would ask that you help to vote to repeal the water ban and support small business in Sudbury. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ken.
Thank you.
The Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen did not take a position on this article.
Did the Board of Health have anything to say on this? I don't. Are you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Bill Murphy, Health Director. The Board of Health takes no position on this article.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone like to speak on Article 17? Yes, Mr. Williams.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. Last Saturday was a wonderful fall day here in Sudbury. We had all kinds of activities going on at Town Center. The Art Department, Police Department had open houses, the Art Association, the Garden Club, the Historical Society, and I decided that I would, instead of taking my car downtown, I would walk. And my walk entailed about a mile along Sudbury, along Route 27. And I decided I'd take a small a day pack because I might want to bring back a plant or something that was in the being sold by the Historical Society. And as I started walking along, I realized that I was walking past one plastic bottle after another. And I started to pick them up. And I got maybe a third of the way down, like a third of a mile, down Route 27, and my pack was full. Thank heavens there was somebody who had yet to take in their recycling container, which was sitting along 27. So I dumped the bottles into their recycling container and continued my walk, and in another third of a mile, filled up my pack once again. And the final third of a mile, I filled it up once again, and the fire station had a recycling bin, so I put it in there. And that's characteristic of what I have seen on roads all over Sudbury. I do a lot of cycling, and cyclists are particularly cognizant of what sits alongside the road, much more than people in cars are. And plastic bottles are just a plague. And so we're talking about one side, the supply side, trying to reduce the amount of plastics produced, but on the other side, the disposal side, and the current system is not working very well. So I would like to see this article defeated.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Allwan.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. I would ask Ms. Moderator if we could have some of the students who worked on the bottle and bag ban from last town meeting come forward and make a presentation. Many are Serbia residents, but they are underage.
Yes, since they are non-voters, I will need to get permission from the hall for that to happen. So I will entertain a motion to allow Lincoln Sudbury students to address the hall. Okay, thank you. And a second? Thank you. And a vote. That would need two-thirds to pass. Okay. And I didn't say all in favor. All in favor. Thank you. All opposed. That passes by well more than two-thirds. Thank you. So please do come forward when you're ready. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Whose slide is that? That's your slide. That's for the presentation that's about to begin. Oh. I'm sorry. I wasn't looking at the screen before. I understand it was an inadvertent slide previously. It belongs properly with this group, so I'm going to allow it to remain on the screen. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lucy Bergeron. I'm a student here, and I live in Lincoln. And we are the Lincoln Sudbury Environmental Club, and we want to show you why we believe that we can be environmentally friendly while also being friendly to businesses.
I'm Anjali Das. I'm also a student of LS from Lincoln. We want to remind you that Sudbury voted for a plastics reduction bylaw last May because of the devastating impact that plastic has on the environment. This includes a loss of natural resources that are used to manufacture single-use plastic bottles, and since only about 30% of these bottles are recycled, the dumping of the used bottles in landfills or oceans. Not only does this pollute our planet, it has also proven incredibly dangerous for animals.
My name is Julia Concannon. I'm also a student at Lincoln Sudbury, and I'm from Sudbury. We also voted for a reduction in plastics last May due to several health concerns. Chemicals found in the PET used to make plastic bottles seep into the water and have been linked to numerous medical issues. Additionally, tap water is regulated by the EPA and tested daily. Bottled water, on the other hand, is not as strictly regulated.
My name is Nicole Garay. I'm a student at LS, and I'm from Sudbury. We are not anti-business, only against excess plastic waste and harming the environment. Stores can still sell alternative single-use water bottles like aluminum, like this one, or boxed water, and still make a profit. These alternatives are much better for the environment. Aluminum has a 70% recycling rate and can be recycled infinitely. Stores can also sell reusable water bottles with their logo as an advertisement strategy. There are non-plastic alternatives that benefit both stores and the environment.
Hi, I'm Kirsten Kelly. I'm also a student from Lincoln Sudbury. I live in Sudbury. And as a part of the plastic reduction effort in Sudbury, we're trying to encourage people to bring their own reusable water bottles because this is really the best option for the environment. Some businesses have voiced their concern over this, so we're trying to encourage them to install refill stations, which is pictured above. We have them all over LS, and I can personally attest to the fact that they're very, very useful. If stores were to install these, they could potentially put a small usage fee and earn some revenue, or they could use these to attract people to their stores, which could potentially result in them buying something. We're currently working on a tap map, which you can see above. Concord has done it, and it's basically a map that has all of the locations where you can fill up your water bottle. So we've been trying to reach out to businesses, asking if we can add their location and hoping that this will attract business to their stores.
Okay, great. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is just a list of our local supporters.
So thank you for listening to our presentation. The concerns of businesses and people in the community really do matter to us. But we do think that it's possible to find a balance between being friendly to the environment and then also making sure businesses can still thrive. Like we mentioned, there are alternatives to single-use plastic bottles that can be used for a profit. And our goal is really solely to make Sudbury a more environmentally friendly community and a more beautiful place to live before it's too late.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to be heard on this article? Yes, all the way on the side there.
Hi there. Jack Heiser, 66 Willow Road. I spoke out against this bottle bill at the last town meeting, and again, I agree with the business owners here. I think this is very anti-business, and I have my own reusable water bottle here. I hardly ever buy water bottles, but sometimes you do need to if you come to a sporting event and you don't have your bottle, or think of the situation, you have a party, whether it be for your family, your grandkids, or something like that, you want some water bottles, and you're going to go support our local businesses. You can't do that if we have this water bottle ban. So you'll have to go to Framingham or Marlboro or Wayland or something like that. So I think it's very anti-business. We're hearing from one business owner. I've talked to some other business owners. They talk about the profitability. And if this gets passed, they're just going to pass on the cost and add to the cost of pizza or whatever. So I encourage us not to have the government telling us what to do and to reuse water bottles, but we don't need this ban. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else? Yes, in the center of the room, in the dark.
Glenn Pransky, 102 Barton Drive, Sudbury. I'm very much in favor of this. But I wasn't at the outset because I was also concerned about the effect on small businesses. So I went over to Concord and went in and out of a lot of the small shops just asking what's been the impact. And the consistent answer I got was two. One was what impact on the overall business? And that was despite some of the same sentiments that we've heard here. And the second was that some of the stores felt that by having a sign in front indicating that people could fill their water bottle at their store, they were bringing in more gross revenue, and that the margins on these water bottles of less than a liter is pretty small compared to something that was actually baked in the store that they would sell.
Thank you. I see Ms. Hullinger, I think, back there, back corner. And then I'll work my way this way.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. I look at this issue more on a global level. There are some things within our community that I think needs to be looked at in totality, where things affect other things. We have a transfer station that one of the pictures up there, one of the water cartons up there, doesn't actually accept. I feel like this bylaw was a little bit before its time, that we should look at ways that Sudbury can become a greener community in terms of what kinds of things we can do in order to increase recyclability at the transfer station, incorporate the business owners in some of these initiatives, and then put forth something that's a little bit more comprehensive. It's not that I'm against, I'm not against moving forward. This is the wave of the future and what we're going to be looking at further down the road. I simply think that it can be thought out a little further and include more aspects of the community. Instead of focusing on the small businesses and their profit margin. Thank you.
Thank you. And working in counterclockwise order from my perspective, right? Whoever has their hand up on the aisle who just had the mic, I thought. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's see. James Brownell, Horse Pond Road.
I've really kind of, like, in my mind, been on both sides of this issue. I mean, there's a lot of good points that the business owner is making. I see a lot of good points on the other side. A major objection is that this doesn't include everything. Well, you have soda, you have flavored water, everything else. I mean, what do you say to that if this is a start? It's like going in a row with litter and just say, well, it doesn't matter, throw some more litter down. I mean, it's a beginning. It's beginning dealing with, this isn't just plastic. Plastic is made of fossil fuel. It's dealing with global warming, with fossil fuel, with environmental degradation. One of the things is, well, that there's plastic water bottles all over the place. I see them in front of my house. And certainly there's other kinds of plastic, but this will certainly help. Another is that that it's going to hurt small business. Again, I don't think there's really any proof of that, but certainly if there's any issue at all, they can use cardboard, they can use glass, they can have their own water filling station. Another is that I hear this all the time, and a lot of my friends say this, well, geez, is it water the healthiest thing you can drink? Well, I mean, does anyone really think that, you know, these plastic water bottles are healthy? I mean, you're dealing with BPA, with phthalates, with PVC. I mean, there's like, you're drinking basically a hazardous waste dump when you're drinking this water bottle. You might as well drink soda. Finally, you know, this is something where you look at these kids here. I mean, this is an example of our kids setting a good example for us, these adults. When they're going to have to live in this world long after we're dead and gone. And they're going to have to inherit our mess. And they're actually setting an example for us, and we're undoing their good example because we somehow know better. I just don't buy it. I think this is a bill that deserves to be put in place. And certainly if there are issues around it, we'll deal with those issues. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Okay, I'm working my way toward the front of the auditorium. The next row down, there's a gentleman who had his hand up.
Milton Jones, 29 Moran Circle. You know, we need to look at this issue in a global perspective. If I can't go to a local store in Sudbury and get some bottled water, it doesn't take me long to go to Framingham or Wayland and get it. But one question I'd like to ask here is, this water that the stores are providing, where is it coming from? Where is it? Will somebody tell me? Is it Sudbury water with the chlorine? Or is it spring water? From what spring? What is the source of this water?
Thank you for your comment. Does anyone have anything different to say? We've heard several perspectives, and I'm aware of the hour and the patience of the hall. Okay, I see a handful here and a handful here. So I'll continue my way this way. On the aisle. Yes.
Thank you. Scott Smigler, 125 Plimpton Road. So first, I think when this bill was originally passed at last town meeting, I think you had the Board of Health and you had some other stakeholders trying to express a different side of this. And I'm not sure that we were listening. And here we have the owner of Sudbury Coffee Works. For people that visit Sudbury Coffee Works, it's a town treasurer. There's other local businesses as well who have expressed concerns about this bottle bill. And I know a lot of us don't like having just chains in Sudbury. We like having small businesses who bring uniqueness to the town. And I think we have to take a second and listen to what they're telling us. I don't think Dan, who was very supportive of the town when we were dealing with other projects that frankly would have been in his favor. Sudbury Station would have brought a lot of new customers into his door. But he took a stand and he said, okay, you can have your petition there. We're going to support you, because he was listening to the town and putting the town in some ways over his own benefit. Two, I think that there's some legitimate concerns around emergency situation. When you do have catastrophic weather events, for example, what do people do? They go to the store and they try to buy water. I'm not sure that our local businesses in Sudbury are going to be able to stock up on enough paper-based water products to manage that situation. Three, I understand that there's this notion that paper can be recycled and thus alternatives to plastic bottles are better, But a lot of these water-based products aren't necessarily recyclable. And I think that before we say an acceptable alternative is that, I think we should really understand, you know, are these alternatives truly going to be more environmentally friendly? Can they even be recycled in the first place? Or are our premises even right? For Sudbury gets about 9% of its tax from businesses. And because we get such a low percentage of our tax revenue from businesses, the rest falls on households, and we have lots of projects that we want to be doing. Even if this bill is justified in many ways, we're still sending a message in the small business community, which I think still represents like 65% of job growth in this country, that Sudbury is not the place for you. So I would just urge people to think about other perspectives, think about what the Board of Health has said at the last meeting, and consider whether this is a problem that should be solved, but solved at the state level. I'm against plastic bottles as much as possible. I try to find alternatives. I think we all should. But do we take choice away from consumers and residents? So it's as much a philosophical issue as anything else. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Yes, and is this, so I will take now new points. Yes, in the on this aisle right there. Thank you.
Thank you. Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. I sympathize with the people who object to this, the original ban, but I do urge the business community to think in wider terms, or even look back in the past. There was a time when there were water fountains. And there are other ways to give people water, and if those businesses could look into other ways or larger quantities that can be used, quantities of purified water, for example. A certain place in Maine has very large bottles that they'll deliver. And there are other ways. I would also like to thank the students. I think they did a great job. So I would urge you to vote against the repeal.
Okay. I am trying to see who George Conner's pointing at. Yes, Selectman Simon.
I just one or two points. The reason that the statewide ban on small water bottles didn't pass is because it was opposed by the beverage industry to the tune of about $8 million. So that industry has effectively killed the statewide ban, and it's up to us on a local level to take the appropriate action to do the right thing. At one point, we were told that if smoking were banned in restaurants and bars, they'd go out of business. Well, it was a scare tactic. It wasn't so. And so with small water bottles, this is the way for the future. We took a step forward last May by passing the ban. Let's not slide back at this point. And finally, with these small water bottles, all businesses in Sudbury would be on the same even playing field. And there are other opportunities, such as water and aluminum bottles, with which they can make their profit. And we are a business-friendly town, and we are also an environmentally friendly town, and we have prided ourselves on being a green town. Let's stay with it.
Okay, I'm sensing that we have heard all of the points. If someone wanted to make a motion to call the question, I would entertain. I need to recognize you. I will recognize Mr. Morley.
With all respect to the hall, I do ask that we call the question.
I would like you to phrase that in terms of a motion, please.
I move that we call the question, and it's Christopher Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. And that requires a two-thirds vote of the hall. All in favor of calling the question? All opposed? That's almost unanimous. So we will proceed now to vote on the motion before us, which is to move in the words of the article. And for this, we need a majority vote. All in favor, please raise your cards. I'm sorry, we're voting on the bottle ban repeal. So by raising your cards for supporting this motion under Article 17, you will be voting to repeal the bottle ban. All in favor of repeal? Okay, all opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. I'm sorry, that fails. You'll have a chance to fire me if I choose to put my name on the ballot, so apologies, my brain shuts off around 11. But before it completely shuts down, we do have one more article. And before we get to that, I just want to say thank you so much to the town staff who have put up with all of us tonight and for all their hard work all throughout the year, every one of you. I had no idea until I started preparing for this potentiality of just the amount of work that goes into a town meeting. And to make them do this now twice a year is really quite extraordinary. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And now I will move to Article 18. Yes. Absolutely, yes. I can thank the town clerk for helping to organize the captioning, the Board of Selectmen may have arranged for the captioning. In any event, whoever's responsible for it, thank you very much. Actually, it was Mark Thompson. Thank you. And now, Article 18, adopt Sudbury welcoming town policies. I'll recognize Fred Taylor for a motion, if he is here. Yes, Mr. Taylor.
Do I need to state the motion?
Yes, if you could state the motion as is on the screen, the motion to indefinitely postpone.
So I am one of the petitioners for this article, and tonight I am making a motion to indefinitely postpone it.
And Mr. Taylor, excuse me, what is your address for our record?
Yes, 38 Cider Mill Road.
Thank you. Is there a second to that motion? There is. Mr. Taylor, if you would like to make a presentation on your motion.
Yes.
Okay.
Before I get into the reasons why, I just want to say a little bit of background about a welcoming town and our process. A welcoming town is generally defined by a set of policies, the purpose of which is to protect the rights of all immigrants, regardless of their immigration status. The policies do not give immigrants any rights that all of us do not share. They publicly state that all immigrants will receive fair and just treatment by a town's police force and its employees. The policies focus on responsibilities which lawfully are and are not those of local agents in the enforcement of the nation's federal immigration laws. Now, our process working on this is similar to other towns. We met with stakeholders from the very beginning. One of the first people we met with is Chief Nix. We actually met with him twice and presented the policies. We revised them at one point and then came back a second time. At the end of the second meeting, he found them consistent with the practices of the police force, which we were pleased to hear. We also met with the selectmen individually and in small groups, and we have kept up contact with two or three of them throughout. And we also...
I'm sorry, yes? Please wait for the microphone. Thank you.
Andrew Novick, 38 Cranberry Circle, Sudbury. The speaker is not speaking to his motion. He's speaking to politics for the
article he's now requesting to postpone.
I'm going to allow it as background for the indefinite postponement, but if we could perhaps have a synopsis of where this is going, maybe.
Yeah, I'll conclude. I'm almost finished. I just wanted to say something about the process, because the process we feel is incomplete. So just to wrap up, we met with some other groups as well and talked to them. But we have two reasons for postponement. The first of which is we discovered recently, within the last 4 or 5 weeks, that a number of people did not completely understand what the policies were about, what this Welcoming Town was about. We had some questions asked that troubled us, and we heard those directly and indirectly. And so we felt it important to pause and spend more time educating both residents and communicating with them. I think we tried to do that, but I don't think we sufficiently did a good enough job in that. I think this issue is too important for the townspeople not to make it clear what the policy is about, what we are striving to do. So, in fact, we have already started to organize some speakers to come in the coming months, and also some forums where residents will have an opportunity to come and discuss the policies with us. And the second reason was it also came to our attention just recently that even though Chief Nix did find the policies consistent with the practices of the police force, he had some concerns. And it was never our intent to impose something on the police force or Chief Nix that he felt uncomfortable with or did not, or that compromised the safety of residents or anyone. Finding that out just a few weeks ago, we actually met with him a third time with one of the select people and tried to work out some of the language, and soon discovered the language was going to be beyond the four corners of the article, and that would require a new article. So those are the reasons why, and we regret we were looking forward to having a vote for tonight. That's it. That's the explanation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor. Would the Finance Committee like to say anything? The
Finance Committee takes no position on indefinite postponement.
And the Selectmen?
The Selectmen support postponement of the article.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on the topic of postponement? I see no one. So this requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. Any opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. And I will now accept a motion to dissolve this special town meeting. All right, second. And that requires a majority. And all in favor, yes. And any opposed? Thank you very much.